greatest WWE champion of all time.
I'm the whole God.
And I am a wrestling God.
Who among you has that one single ingredient who has enough ruthless aggression?
Hello, Hawkamaniacs. That's right. It's a new episode. I mean, like, it's not the one you were expecting because Armageddon's still missing. But we recorded that one 3 times and I'm not going back. But, you know, life goes on and, speaking of going on, I've gone on from one co-host to another. Magic is a lot busier in his life than I am. Like, this is basically, like, my primary thing. So, I got a special guest co-host this week, and I hope you give them all a warm, ruthless, well, that doesn't sound good. Anyway, give him a warm welcome, because he works for the website that I run. So, Swanson, from the TV Tuners Podcast, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm fantastic, and I'm so stoked to be on the show.
Well, it's good to have you. I mean, like I alluded to, it's been a long time since we did an episode.
Right, yeah, not a problem. I mean, the ruthless fans are there, is that what you call them?
Yeah, well, you know, it really, like, I don't think we've come up with a title for, like, the overall fan base, which is kind of weird because, like, we've got individual titles, like, I have my Hawkamaniacs.
Right.
Magic has his Magicians, which is a name that I just came up with right now. And Asher has the Ashholes, so...
Okay, I like all of those. How about, like, the... Yeah. What if it was, like, the Aggressors?
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, there you go.
See, look at that. This was a good decision already. You're contributing so much.
Well, I try.
All right, man. So we're here, like I said, because Armageddon 2002 was... not a great show, you guys. Like, I don't think you understand, like, how much damage that did to me, because we had to record the episode 3 times, and all 3 times there was something wrong with the file. Like, I might be able to, like, cobble together, like a Doctor Who recreation style, episode, like, just a lot of, like, background music and, me talking about the Tori Wilson, Dawn Marie angle, which I'm probably going to get to on this, so...
Yeah, that definitely happened.
Yeah, well, I know the fans really wanted to hear me talk about the disgustingness that happened the month before, but that's going to have to wait till the Lost episode comes out, because I'm not going back to that. I will say, though, Shawn Michaels versus Triple H in 3 Stages of Hell was the worst match that I'd seen so far on this series.
Oh,
until
really?
This show. Yeah, it was really boring. It was like 45 minutes of them, like, doing spots and then stalling.
It seems like a lot of 02, 03 Triple H matches seem boring.
Oh, yeah, definitely. He was not exactly the most interesting cat in the block at this point.
Yeah. You guys, but, I take it you guys already did the Goldberg match.
No, we haven't gotten there yet.
Oh, that's next. That's coming up, right? My timeline is off.
Yeah, no, we've done everything from Vengeance 2001 until Survivor Series 2002.
Right, Goldberg doesn't come in until after WrestleMania 19.
Exactly. We got to see Goldberg versus The Rock first, and that's a whole different train wreck.
I don't doubt.
Although we do get to hear my favorite insult that I have absolutely... I don't really think it means what The Rock thinks it means, or if it does, he really got away with one, and that's bald-headed whisker biscuit.
Well, that's a new one.
Yeah, that's something that he called Goldberg on TV, but well, that's a few months down the line.
Yeah, getting ahead of ourselves.
Probably literally at this pace. But this time, we're here to talk about the 2003 Royal Rumble, brought to you from the from the Fleet Center in Boston, Massachusetts, January 19th, 2003.
Sponsored by PlayStation 2.
Yeah, sponsored by PlayStation 2. And actually, I was going to look up what the theme for this pay-per-view was, because they played it a lot.
Every break possible.
Oh, it was Falling Apart by Trust Company. Luckily, I still had the Wikipedia page open. But, yeah, they played this song a lot, and like most themes from this time, it was not good.
Yeah, I mean, this was back when Raw was playing a lot of generic butt rock, and not unlike now where they play like just generic music in general.
Yeah, I mean, I'll kind of take this era's music over having to hear like Pitbull though.
Yeah, none of these guys had to do live performances at Mania.
Yeah, if I like, I swear, a couple years ago when they used that, what was that, Flo Rida song, Wild Ones, as the theme for WrestleMania?
Yeah.
Like, I watched it on pay-per-view, and, like, that included, you know, watching the pre-show and the YouTube pre-show and all that good stuff, because I'm a fucking nerd, you guys.
Yeah. Well, but, I mean, you have a wrestling podcast, so.
I do. Yeah, so they played that song so much that, like, I literally, like, every time I hear it now, I have the same response that the dude has to hearing the Eagles. I'm like, I fucking hate this song, man.
Now, if that was playing in a cab, do you think you'd be thrown out just like the dude?
No, I think that the cabbie would probably be like, I agree, and just change it.
You're right, yeah. Flo Rida doesn't instill the same fervent fan base as the Eagles.
Exactly. It's way more reasonable to hate Flo Rida than it is to hate the Eagles.
That's true.
Although I do love shorties and apple-bottom jeans and boots with the fur. Man, I got like a frog stuck in my throat, and it made it sound like it was like calling out to ancient Japanese warriors or something. The shorties.
The shorties.
God, we're just hitting all the bases on this one.
Yeah, well, that's what you get when you get me. It's the Swanson guarantee.
Hey, I love it. So we started off with a video of just like various guys talking about how important main eventing WrestleMania is. Like we got Benoit and Steiner and Triple H. Jericho.
We're allowed to say Benoit.
We are allowed to say Benoit.
Okay, just making sure.
Actually, I'm probably going to turn quite a few people off by the time we get to the Benoit Kurt Angle match because I fucking adore that match. But that's later in the show.
Yeah. Continue.
Well, I was just going to say, I think it's funny that Scott Steiner was, like, in the video talking about how important it is to main event WrestleMania when the man would not even have another WrestleMania match.
No, not even close. Which, we'll get to why when we get there, but I actually enjoyed this opening vid a lot.
Oh, yeah, it was really good. Like, we've talked about it before on the show, but this was definitely a high point in their video production. Yeah, every single show had at least one.
Yeah, they certainly don't do that stuff anymore for the Rumble, and it would really be like, it'd put it over the top for me.
Definitely. Yeah, there's a lot of touches throughout this show that I think are lacking from the current era Rumbles, especially in the Rumble match itself. Yeah. But, I mean, it was a pretty short video. We got a nice little introduction to the show from the announcers. Both shows, and I mean, we were just boom right into the first match with Big Show and Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, this was back when Big Show was actually credible.
Yes, still chubby though.
Oh, he's always big. That's he has to be, I think.
Like it's fantastic though because you look at the Big Show from like 12 years ago, and then you look at him now, and really the only difference is a bit of hair off the top.
Yeah, that's about it. He still has like the same goatee and everything.
He's the least aged giant I've ever seen.
Yeah.
He's like he's the Hagrid of the WWE.
And to keep up with it, his ring skills have stayed roughly the same.
Yes, no improvement, but he hasn't exactly gotten worse.
That's true. It's mainly just that he's been around so long that leads to most people being tired of him.
Yes,
the Kane effect, as I call it.
Yes, I'll always be a Big Show fan, though. Like, and this match, like, it kind of reminded me, like, why that is. Because the convoluted angle aside, which, for just a refresher for everybody listening, at the Survivor Series, Paul Heyman turned on Brock Lesnar so that Big Show could win the title.
Yeah, I remember this.
And then Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar were buddies for, like, a month. And Lesnar came out at Armageddon and cost the Big Show the title against Kurt Angle. And then he chased Paul Heyman off. And then, like, the next Thursday night on SmackDown, Kurt Angle was like, oh, by the way, totally hired Paul Heyman as my manager before that show.
Now, was Paulie still booking SmackDown at the time?
I think this was still during his run, yeah.
Okay.
It was either during or right after, but I think it was during. But, yeah, it's weird because, like, Kurt Angle manufactures a situation, presumably with Paul Heyman, where Heyman is A, put in danger, and B, double-crossing the Big Show to cost him the title. And then, like, Big Show's like, oh, but you're still my manager, right? Like, we can still hang out and be bros. Like, if somebody cost me the WWE title, I'd be just pissed. I'd be so mad. If somebody cost me a game of Mario Kart, I'd get angry.
Well, Big Show probably doesn't have a lot of friends.
That's true.
Yeah.
You don't make friends in the strip mall business.
No, very few.
It was a slow start, but I mean, once they started building in, like, to the actual match itself, because when you look at a matchup like Brock Lesnar and Big Show, it does not sound impressive at all on paper. I mean, outside of the spectacle of, like, two behemoths going at it.
Right, yeah.
But holy shit, Big Show bumped like a cruiserweight this match for Lesnar.
Yeah, he made Lesnar look real good. It was weird seeing Lesnar being the underdog.
Yeah, but they did it in the best way possible in that this was like, oh, the Big Show has got the size advantage on Lesnar, but holy shit, Brock Lesnar's throwing the Big Show around in the spots that he gets in.
Yeah. Yeah, it was actually the best way to make Lesnar, like, a credible underdog while also being, you know, Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, it was really, because he almost played the face in peril, if not for all the segments of just, like, throwing the Big Show.
Yeah.
And actually, the most impressive spot in this fucking match, like, there was a lot of belly-to-belly suplexes and others.
Yeah,
throws that Lesnar could manage.
Belly-to-belly suplexes seemed to be the move of the night.
Yeah, they were the theme of the show. Like, if I had to pick one word with hyphenates, well, you know, multiple words with hyphens, it would be belly-to-belly suplex to describe this show.
That would be it right there. That's the title, but, that's the title of the episode.
Yes, I love it. Cole actually at one point claims that the Big Show is a man that can break the neck off of beer bottles.
Yeah, I noticed that too, and I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, like, what a weird way to describe someone's strength. Like, pretty sure I could break a bottle if I tried really hard, Cole.
Yeah.
Not that impressive.
This was this was alternate reality Cole, where he has the evil goatee.
Yeah, the darkest timeline Michael Cole. Which is weird, because this is when he was at his peak commentary-wise, in my opinion, at least.
Yeah, even Taz is all right.
Yeah, this was Taz before he, you know, became weird jokey Taz.
Yeah.
You know, not for nothing, but Taz used to be a pretty solid, serious commentator.
Yeah, he does a couple, I don't know in this match in particular, but he does a couple blunders and mess-ups in between, but he always seems to catch himself, unlike in TNA.
Yeah, I think he cared more at this point. Like, oh, I fucked up, better fix it.
Yeah.
And now he's just like, let the pigeons loose and cut me a check. I mean, I'll be honest, though. If I was working for a company where, you know, I had to stand up in the balcony to see the ring to call the action, I probably wouldn't care either.
Yeah. Yeah, I honestly, I don't doubt him. I don't blame him, I mean.
Yeah, no, Taz has my full support for slacking off. But Lesnar was not slacking at all in this match when he hit a goddamn German suplex on the Big Show.
Yeah. He was practicing for when he met John Cena a couple years later.
Yeah, he's like, gotta throw this fucking giant around to build up my suplex power.
His meter wasn't full.
I've gotta build my suplex stats, guys.
Yeah.
Get enough creation points to up my fucking overall. But Big Show attempted a choke slam at one point, and it didn't work out well for him. And then he fucking managed one because Lesnar was trying to kill Paul Heyman. Like, this was basically the theme of SmackDown at the time. Like, Ill, is Brock Lesnar going to get to murder Paul Heyman this week?
Yeah.
And it almost happened, but Big Show hits a choke slam, which fucking results in a near fall. And then he tries another one, which Lesnar, like, wriggles out of, and then hits an F5, which always an impressive spot on a big guy.
Yeah.
And gets the pinfall, 6 minutes, 29 seconds. Overall, not a bad match, a really good opener that got the crowd into it.
Yeah, real and, good and quick, too.
Yeah, definitely. Like, that's about the length. Like, this is the exact kind of match you want to book on a show like this to start it off.
Right.
Because you know you're going to get the crowd hot with, like, basically the biggest face in the company being the first dude out. And then you give him, you know, a short showcase match where, oh, guess what? He's going to be in the Royal Rumble later. Get hype.
Right, yeah. Now, I want to ask real quick your personal opinion. What do you think is the worst of Big Show's finishers, the choke slam or the punch?
I'm going to go with option C, the alley-oop.
Oh, I totally forgot about that one.
Yeah, that's definitely the worst one. Then I'm going to go with the knockout punch right behind it.
The knockout punch is just a lazy finisher.
Yeah, it's really lazy, but I always thought, like, he was a dude that did an impressive choke slam. Like, it wasn't like he just picked you up and dropped you.
No, yeah.
He, like, followed through and just it made it look like he was trying to drive the dude through the mat.
Yeah, he always did a real good choke slam from what I remember.
Unfortunately, didn't work out well for him. His Big Show's going to hit the showers early.
Yeah, he does not come back.
He's headed to the pay window. Backstage, we've got Terry Runnels with Jericho. Terry, who I kind of feel has no place as a backstage interviewer.
No, she barely has enough charisma to be a manager, so.
Yeah, it was really weird watching her as, like, a backstage interviewer because she was not at all interesting. Just, like,
a couple months.
Yeah, and she wasn't interesting, she wasn't interested. It's like they fucking, it's like, okay, Terry, you got a year left in your contract. We can't pair you with anybody. We can't make you a wrestler. So we're just going to, like, give you a microphone, and you have to stand next to guys while they talk.
Yeah.
Actually, the most interesting part of this segment was Jericho's Don't Be an Ass Clown shirt. Yeah. I really want to know how many people bought that.
You know, I was looking less at the shirt and more at his horrible goatee.
Oh, yeah. Jericho had really bad facial hair around this time.
Yeah, I vaguely remember this era, and I've forgotten his goatee. I've blocked it from my memory.
Jericho was trying really, really hard to make Fozzy into an Anthrax cover band at this point.
Yeah, he's trying very hard.
Yeah, he's growing the Scott Ian. Just kidding. We love you, Jericho. Well, I do.
No, I think we all love Jericho. We never know. Who knows what he's listening to these days? Not this stuff, probably.
Yeah, if he is, though, he can call me an ass clown, and I'd be okay with it.
Yeah.
He
can come on the show and call you an ass clown.
Yes, holy shit. I would actually, like, sell a kidney. Well, not really, but, you know, dramatic license. Just to get Jericho to, like, do an intro for this show where he calls me an ass clown.
That would be the greatest thing ever, honestly. I would do that, and my podcast isn't even about wrestling.
See, like, I wish that I could say, hey, guys, let's try to make this happen. But you guys couldn't even get Vince Russo to endorse the show. That was a legitimate campaign we tried to get going, and I think maybe 3 of you tweeted him about it.
That's a shame.
It's all right, though. It's okay, though, because Vince Russo, like, and I were talking on Twitter a few weeks ago, and I told him that if he ever needs help figuring out how to do shit in TEW 2005 or whatever fucking version he's playing, to just give me a jingle and we'll talk about it.
Is he taken to doing virtual booking now?
Oh yeah, he puts videos of it online and everything. It's fucking fascinating to listen to that man talk.
Yeah, I don't doubt that. I listened to him and Steve Austin go at it. So
yeah. Like, Russo, like, say what you will about the man. He's fucking fascinating.
Yeah, no, definitely.
And, yeah, like, Vince, if you're not listening to this, yeah. And, guys, get on getting him to endorse this and to get me called an ass clown. I believe in you, aggressors. Hey, yeah. that's really smooth.
Hey, well, that's the guarantee over here. I'll get you one word that you can call your fans per episode.
I love it. So Jericho got he explains why he had to pick his number, and instead of being like, oh, I'm gonna be number 30, he's like, I'm gonna be number 2, because Shawn Michaels was forced to be number 1, and they had quite the blood feud going at this point. It was pretty basic, though. Jericho just explained, oh, yeah, I'm going to be number 2 because I want to murder HBK, and then I'm going to win the Rumble and headline WrestleMania for the second year in a row.
Right.
Basic stuff, good stuff. Terry should go away. Tag team titles were up next, though, with the Dudleys versus Lance Storm and William Regal, who that's a team that I think a lot of people forget about, and that's a goddamn crime.
I certainly forgot about them, but I was impressed with the match, actually.
Yeah, this is actually not long. They would break up not long after this, like, just due to the circumstances of booking and Regal's health going to shit for a while.
Yeah.
And this would lead into the run where Lance Storm's gimmick was Steve Austin would come out and call him boring.
And that was it.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. And actually, at this point, in addition to the Dudleys, they were also feuding with the commentary team of Jim Ross and Jerry the King Lawler. That's right. The tag team champions were feuding with the commentary team.
Yeah, I did hear that Lawler was talking about, he had it, well, when they show up, Lawler has a chain out. And he's telling them to get some if they want it.
He's like, I'll punch you in the mouth with this chain. Because that's basically what he had done on Raw, like, several times leading up to this. But we got, actually, like you were saying, if this was a pretty good match, like, the Dudleys at this point were kind of, like, they were about to hit their lazy phase, but they still showed up with their work boots on some nights.
Yeah.
There was a lot of really good tag team work from both sides, especially with Storm and Regal working a lot of quick back and forth tags and just trying to keep D-Von separated from Bubba in the ring.
Yeah, to me, Regal always seemed like I didn't start watching until about a year from this in 2004. But for me, Regal always seemed like a tag team guy. That's what he was always doing.
Yeah, and actually, that kind of holds true for other parts of his career too, because quite a good portion of his WCW run was spent in tag teams.
Yeah, I think when I started watching, he was either in a tag team with Tajiri, or he was definitely in with Eugene at one point.
Yeah, he was Eugene's... God, what did they... He was like his... like, he just looked after Eugene, and then he became a face.
Yeah.
And then they were a tag team. Really weird stuff, but that's going to be, like, a year down the line, and I can't wait to get to that stuff.
Yeah, I don't, Eugene's interesting. I've never gone back and rewatched his stuff, mainly because I don't want to, but,
I feel so much more uncomfortable watching Eugene now than when I did when I was 13.
Oh, yeah, when I was watching it, like, as an 11-year-old, I was just like, oh, this is perfectly normal.
Yeah, this is fine. Like, they made Eugene the perfect underdog for kids that didn't quite grasp the situation.
And then he like, randomly turns heel a couple years later.
Oh, my God. Heel Eugene was something that, like, people joked about on the internet forever. Like, oh, wouldn't it be funny if they made Eugene a heel? Ha, ha, ha.
And then
they did it. Yeah, then everybody's like, man, why'd they make Eugene heel? This isn't as funny as we thought it would be.
Yeah.
But another weird commentary note happened in this match with, like, a good, like, at least, you know, 4 minutes of this match, the heels were in solid control.
Yeah.
Like, just, like, unquestionably, like, they, like, if we were going on points, they would have won the first half of the match. And JR delivers the commentary line, the champs haven't gotten off the blocks.
Yeah.
What the fuck? When the face team spends most of the match getting beat up, guess what? The champs got off the blocks.
Yeah, more than a little bit.
More than a little bit. Actually, this match had one of the, like, the hottest to cold hot tags I think I've seen in a while.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like Bubba came in, and the crowd popped pretty big for D-Von finally getting the tag.
Yeah.
And Bubba was just an absolute house of fire. Like, just destroying the heels. I mean, we got the bionic elbow spot and the Bubba bomb and all his signature spots, basically.
Yeah.
But the crowd just, like they popped, and then they're like, ah. Like, there was a lot of great action that they're just like, whatever, where's my clam chowder? Because we're in Boston.
Right, mm-hmm.
That's about all I know about Boston. That and fuck the Red Sox.
I think that's all they eat over there.
It's probably pretty true.
Yeah. I also know that Mark Wahlberg lives there and that Cheers is set there. That's all I know.
Oh, yeah, it was. All right, Boston listeners, don't turn off the episode now. We got the What's Up spot, which always is like, it was always weird to me.
Right.
Like why, of all things, are you going to, like, dive, like, noggin first into a dude's taint? And second of all, why is that not a disqualification? That's a pretty blatant low blow. Like I'm pretty sure, like, everything in that area is just off limits. Like, even the grundle and...
Especially
the grundle. And D-Von would just do this spot in front of the refs all the time.
I guess.
Consistency, goddammit. Then again,
maybe
Nick
the
Patrick
refs,
was the referee.
Yeah, that's true. It was Nick Patrick. He is always shady as fuck.
Yeah. Oh, see, there you go. You're already really into the swing of the show because we have a motto around here, and that's Nick Patrick can eat a dick.
Well, I mean, I think most people who are... who know enough about wrestling to go on a wrestling podcast know that Nick Patrick is a horrible person.
Oh, he's just the worst. He's actually my two least favorite referees of all time are on this show.
So
I kind of
felt
blessed with that officiating. Yes, Earl Hebner is awful.
I think that can be agreed. He's even worse nowadays, where
he's
still officiating.
He got to get that paycheck.
And TNA has done at least 15 different angles where he's been corrupt in some way.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, TNA doesn't lock their merchandise warehouse, so...
Yeah.
He and Dave get all the fucking swag that they need to sell out of the back of the Pinto. I assume they drive a Pinto. Earl and Dave Hebner in a Pinto sounds like the best adventure ever.
Yeah, I imagine.
Actually,
if I was going to pick a car for them, that'd be it.
If I was going to plague them with a vehicle, it would be a Pinto.
Yeah.
But we got Chief of Staff Sean Morley coming out, which I love that they changed Morley's gimmick, well, Val Venus's gimmick, from being as my Botchamania brand brethren on the Attitude Era podcast refer to it, Sexy Man Val Venus.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
To being the Chief of Staff, Sean Morley. Like, fuck off.
Well,
I see
of course,
what you're doing
if
there.
If you were going to hire somebody to be an official in your ring, you would, of course, hire the guy who used to be a porn star.
Oh, of course. Like, and you give him a title that's very clearly a play on the fact that he used to be a porn star. I wish that he would have still cut dirty promos, but, like, not overtly dirty.
Yeah.
Like, that's the magic of Val Venus. Once you take that away, you've got just some goon in a suit out to distract Nick Patrick. And anybody can do that.
Yeah, I'm not sure what his goal was here. Was he working with Regal and Storm, or was he just doing something because he needed to be on the show?
Well, he was Eric Bischoff's Chief of Staff, as his title implies.
Okay, so he's already shady.
Yes, exactly. And so, at this point, like, Bischoff kind of, like, openly hated Keegan Lawler, like, on TV. Like, it'll be expanded upon further, like, once we get to the point where Coach and Al Snow beat Lawler and King. I mean, Lawler and JR in a match to win the commentary duties. Like, that's something that they put on pay-per-view. I can't even make that up.
That was on pay-per-view?
That was on pay-per-view. I can't remember exactly what show.
I thought you were just talking about, like, a random Raw match.
No, they actually, I believe they put that on pay-per-view. Like, somebody listening, like, tweet me or tweet the show and, like, tell me what happened here. Because I can't wait to get to that point in the timeline.
Jesus.
And, yeah, it was really bad. But, so because, like, Regal and Storm were, you know, like, Regal and Storm, and like, they were heels by virtue of, like, having sour faces and not being from the United States.
Yeah.
And, so Bischoff kind of favored them and whatnot. So I guess Morley was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to not cost them the title here. And then D-Von cheated. Although, to be fair, Regal attempted to cheat. And then D-Von, ever the face, gets the Nux and just, like, knocks the piss out of Lance Storm with him.
Yeah.
For the win and the tag team titles, 7/24.
This is their last run with the tag titles, isn't it?
I want to say it's one of their last ones, definitely.
Because they're gone. Gone by the end of 2004, I think.
Yeah, they were gone by the middle of 2005, but they were less active.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, but like the Dudley Boys, see, always were one of those teams. Like, obviously, they were a very talented tag team. Like, you'll never hear me say otherwise.
Yeah, there's no way you're a horrible tag team and you win that many tag titles.
Exactly, but, like, they were always one of those teams, like, I almost can't even think of another team to compare them to. But, like, they were one of those teams where, like, they're like, oh, we need a solid, you know, either, no matter face or heel, tag team. Like, oh, we need somebody to hold the titles to make them look legitimate. And they were, you know, they got that call quite often.
Yeah, in a way, that's sort of how the Road Warriors were in different areas. Because they could always do either or.
Definitely. It's like, oh, well, you know, we need somebody to help build this face tag team. Give the Dudley Boys the titles.
Yeah.
And they did fucking phenomenal work. Like I said, you'll never hear me say a negative word about the Dudley Boys, except for, like, on all those other episodes where Bubba was being really lazy with his singles work, and so I just made fun of him for being fat. Go back and listen to the archive if you haven't heard that, because I came up with some great puns, you guys, like Hubba Bubba Dudley and Chubby Hubby Dudley.
Now, did you talk about D-Von?
No, because we didn't get to see much of D-Von until, like, this is actually, I think, his second match that we've actually reviewed on the show. Because this was during the time when he and Bubba had been broken up for quite a while.
Right.
And D-Von found the Lord.
Right, as Reverend D-Von. Yeah.
Yes, as Reverend D-Von, which I fucking love. Like, I think that gimmick is incredible. And if it had, like, gone to anybody that wasn't established as being a Dudley boy.
Right.
It might have had a little bit more legs. Like, imagine Ernest the Cat Miller as a reverend. Oh my God. I would pay all the money to make that happen.
Bring him back.
But bring him back. Make him a fucking reverend. He's already been a sheik. Or no, an Ayatollah. Sorry. But, yeah, this was, like I said, this was during the time where D-Von and Bubba hadn't been teaming together, and neither one of them was really prepped to be a singles guy at this point. Like, Bubba Dudley, who has an absolutely fantastic singles run in TNA as Bully Ray.
One of the bright spots in the latter days.
Yeah, definitely. Like, just always fantastic until that point where, like, he got put through a table. And then he's like, I'm going to beat up a woman. And then he beat up a woman.
And promptly left the show.
Yeah. Yeah, that was fantastic.
He had to have had the best job. He got to put his boss through a table, actually injure her, and then got to leave with no repercussions.
I'm out the door, bitches.
And now he's probably going to come back to WWE.
Hey, I'll welcome him.
Oh, definitely.
But, yeah, man, fuck that angle, though. But speaking of just really bizarre shit that's kind of somewhat uncomfortable in the wrestling context, we get a video from Nathan Jones.
I barely remember him. Like,
oh, man.
He's got the blandest look, the blandest name. He's the blandest person I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah. He was not, like, I was a full-time fan at this point. Like, you know, and I've detailed that in the past. Like, I watched everything. Fucking Raw, SmackDown, Velocity, Heat, Confidential. Yeah. If it had WWE branding on it and I had it, I watched it.
Yeah, that's how I was once I got into it.
And fucking, I didn't remember this guy, like, having more matches than, like, two. And apparently he had more matches than, like, two.
The concept seems to be, hey, let's make, was it chains or nails?
Nails.
Yeah, let's make nails, but let's give them, like, a normal name that's really boring and nobody would want to remember.
Right, and we're not going to insinuate that any member of law enforcement raped him. Seriously, guys, go back, watch that Boss Man and Nails feud. Totally implied rape.
Well, if anybody was going to do that, it'd be Boss Man.
Right? May he rest in peace.
Yeah.
Oh, God, what a horrible thing I just did there. But, yeah, they build him up with, like, all this stock footage from Australian news basically saying, this guy's a fucking psychopath. And then he's just like, we're going to bring him in as a face.
They did that?
Yeah, they made him hang out with The Undertaker, who, like, there were very few, like, people revered his faces as Undertaker at this time.
I think I remember this story now. Wasn't it, and it ends up being Undertaker in a handicap match against A-Train and somebody else, but it was supposed to be him and Nathan Jones?
Yeah, it was supposed to be Undertaker and Nathan Jones against the Big Show and A-Train at WrestleMania 19, and they realized that Nathan Jones wasn't really ready to be in that spot. And so they had did an angle where the full-blooded Italians beat him up. And then he, yeah, in the shower even, like on the pre-show. And they're like, well, we're going to do a handicap match. And then, like, he comes out and whiffs a kick. And I think it's A-Train. And just generally looks like a joke. And doesn't really at all help The Undertaker.
I can't believe, like... Who thought it was a good idea to have Nunzio and his crew beat up this supposedly credible guy?
Right? I really wish that I could have been there for that booking decision. It's like, well, we got to get him out of the match somehow.
Book Nunzio. All right,
I got it. Yeah. All right, get Nunzio, Stamboli, and the other one in here.
Was it Smothers yet, or did he get a number? I think it was Palumbo.
Yeah, Chucky Palumbo, motorcycle enthusiast.
Yeah, Chucky P, and, they call him in the indies.
Yeah, and he fucking, yeah, they beat him up in the shower. And, like, as far as I was concerned, like, as a child at this point, I was, like, all of his credibility was done for me after that.
Yeah, I don't doubt and then that.
And then he popped up in the match, and I'm just like, okay, cool, don't care. Like, even at 12 years old, I'm like, well, he fucked that move up.
Yeah.
Why am I supposed to like this guy? Although he does in the video with like he just says, "I am Nathan Jones. Good day."
and that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, like.
That's probably the greatest promo he ever cut.
Oh, definitely. But like, if you're gonna book somebody as an unhinged criminal, like, don't make them talk like Crocodile Dundee. Like, I imagine Steve Irwin when I heard this guy say that. You know, say that line at the end.
I actually think that probably would have been a better gimmick idea.
Oh, I would totally watch that.
Nathan Jones, Crocodile Hunter.
If Goldust can make it work, I'm sure this guy could. No, probably not. Yeah, he was terrible.
He probably still wouldn't have done it.
They probably actually gave him a real gimmick, and it just didn't come across. But, oh, God, that's the first line of my notes for this next segment. And, like, this is my gut reaction every time I realize this is coming up. Dawn Marie versus Tori Wilson.
Yeah, this is something all right. You know, a lot of things on this show made me nostalgic and made me miss the way how WWE does certain things. Women's wrestling isn't one of them.
Yeah, no, this storyline, like, I'm gonna run it down real quick for everybody. And, hopefully we can digest it and just not spend too much time dwelling on it because it does drive men mad, much like staring into the eyes of the old gods.
Mm-hmm.
But it all started when Dawn was like, oh, Tori Wilson's old dad. I want to have sex with you. And
let me get a piece of that action.
Yeah, exactly. Let me get a piece of that flabby, phlebitis-riddled body. And Al Wilson's like, cool, chicks are paying attention to me again. And Tori was like, yeah, I don't want you to date my dad. And Dawn Marie was like, okay, if you don't want me to date your dad, then come to my hotel room and let's have sex.
Yeah, that's the usual way to deal with things, right?
Yeah, definitely.
I try to solve all of my problems by doing that, but people just sort of shun me.
Yeah, I would, you know, make love, not war, kids.
Right, exactly.
That's the message of this show.
Yeah.
But they had a really fucking fantastically terrible match. Not match, that's coming up. But they had a really just terrible segment that we talked about on the Lost episode where Dawn Marie showed the video of her and Tori in the hotel room on SmackDown during an in-ring segment, and, like, Al Wilson stood next to her and, like, kept trying to get her to stop the video, and she's like, no! So he's an idiot for going through with marrying her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because that happened, and they were in their underwear. And then on their honeymoon, Dawn fucked him to death.
Yeah, so what this clearly means is that Al Wilson is probably actually really attracted to his daughter, and he liked the video.
Yeah, that's about the gist of where we got in the last one. Like, he's definitely like, yeah, let me see this video. Let me act disgusted, though.
Yeah, turn it off, Dawn, but keep it on.
Exactly. And then, not only did Dawn Marie fuck Al Wilson to death on their honeymoon, which, honestly, I think that's a lot of people's dream way to go.
Yeah, I mean, Dawn wouldn't be my first choice, but sure.
Yeah, like, if, you know, if it were to happen, it happens.
Yeah.
But they did Al's wake on television because that makes sense from a storyline standpoint. Not really. Like, this is really awful storytelling.
I was actually really hoping that somebody would drag the casket away.
You know, that didn't happen, but they did get into a slap fight after Dawn accused Tori of not caring about her dad.
Yeah.
Which led to the casket getting knocked over. Which got a legitimate laugh out of me because, like, a live-ass Al Wilson had to be, like, in that casket pretending he was dead. And then, like, his daughter gets into a slap fight with his kayfabe wife, like, 2 feet away. And then they bump the casket. And he's, like, got to stay there pretending to be dead the whole time.
Yeah, and I thought it was bad when they had to use Cena's dad to get sympathy heat from him.
Yeah, and then you realize, oh, this has been a trick they've been doing forever.
Yeah.
Except nobody fucked John Cena Sr. to death. Yet.
Yeah, that could still happen. Nikki Bella could do her best heel impression, her best heel turn yet.
Oh, man, imagine that angle. Like, that might be the thing that finally got Cena to snap. Get Stanford on the phone. We've got ideas.
Yeah, we'll get hired quick.
And then, more incest.
And then promptly fired.
Well, yeah, because we're wrestling fans and we can't write for the show if we're wrestling fans.
Yeah, that's true. We have to be Hollywood writers first. And then even then, maybe we won't get hired because we like wrestling.
Exactly. We'll just hide that.
Yeah.
But so Dawn, speaking of hiding, Dawn comes out wearing a fucking black veil. And, like, she's got a black, like, sparkly attire, too. Like, I commend them for going all in on this. But I wish it didn't happen in the first place. Although it did give us the gold of Dawn being introduced as Dawn Marie Wilson.
Yeah.
So Tori comes out, and she's very clearly upset. But you know she's the goodie in this match because she's wearing white in comparison to Dawn's black.
It's true. Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because, like, Mike Sparks gives Tori the option not to wrestle. And Dawn's like, fuck that trick, and just attacks her. And we get the most sloppy match, and the fans recognize that to the point where, like, Dawn is the most competent person in that ring. And when she manages to execute a move well, the fans started cheering for her. Like, yeah, she can do stuff. But overall, they really just shat on this match.
Which is a shame, considering that it's back-to-back with another horrible match.
Oh, man, this crowd, I feel bad for this Boston crowd having to sit through this, and then the World Heavyweight title match they got.
But then what comes after is all, it sort of makes up for it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you take the good, you take the bad.
You take them both.
You take both.
You have Royal Rumble 2003.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's more bad in a lot of ways. Just because the bad felt like it dragged on for so long. Like, it took 3.5 minutes to get through this match. Like finally fucking mercifully ended when Dawn hit a swinging neck breaker for the pin.
Like, this match was shorter than the Lesnar opener, and it felt 15 hours longer.
Oh, it felt so much longer. And then Michael Cole gave us one of the best commentary lines of the night. When he just said it, like, he said it in the Owen Hart voice. You know, like, she picked up the win, but she can't bring her father back. Fucking hell! Like, how callous can the face commentator be? Let's find out.
Yeah, well, so of we course, know, they have to mention that her father is still dead.
Yeah, like, Taz was so excited for her, like, she won! Like, yeah, well, her dad's still dead, so did she really win? Like, okay, Cole, guess who's not invited to my birthday party? It's you. So we go backstage with two more people who I wouldn't invite to my birthday party. Even the one that lives within driving distance of this very studio. Eric Bischoff is talking to Randy Orton when Stephanie McMahon steps in. And Bischoff's like, okay, see you later, pal. And Orton just kind of meanders off.
Now, would you invite Steph?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, she seems cool. I'd probably invite Randy Orton, too. Eric Bischoff can't come to any of my birthday parties, though.
He's legally not allowed.
Legally not allowed, no, due to the order of restraining.
Right.
Actually, Eric Bischoff lives, like, an hour away from me.
Does he have a pretty good, does he have a pretty big place? I imagine he has a pretty big place.
I've only seen it from a distance, but it looks to be a pretty solid, you know, domicile.
Right, yeah.
But,
Do you ever see Garrett mowing on the lawn?
Well, actually, funny story. I went, like, I stopped in Lusk to, get gas and use the restroom while driving to, visit my brother. And I was, like, checking out because I bought a couple energy drinks. And, like, the dude in front of me, I saw him, and I'm just like, wow, that guy looks really familiar. Now, did I go to high school with... No, I didn't go to high school with that guy. Did I go to college with that guy? Could not fucking place him. It was Garrett Bischoff at a point where he was on TNA television weekly, and I was still a regular viewer.
And you just couldn't remember.
I could not place him.
That can't... You can't blame yourself for that. That's not something... I mean, I've completely forgotten what he looks like, pretty much.
Oh, I have, too. Like, if I saw him again, I probably would go through the exact same thing, except I wouldn't have a reminder of who he was.
Yeah. Like, I can remember Wes Briscoe more than I can remember Garrett.
Well, yeah, but Wes has those shitty tattoos.
Oh, yeah, he's easily recognizable. And that Heath Slater-ish hair.
He's a one-man something band. He's a one-man jug band.
Yeah.
One-man jug band. But Stephanie, like, she came to say goodbye to Bischoff, because they've been teasing for a while, like, if Bischoff's job performance didn't improve, he was going to get shit-canned.
Right, okay.
And so Bischoff promises, oh, I'm not going to get fired, fucking, I've got an atomic bombshell to drop on Raw tomorrow. And Stephanie's like, oh, well, I'm not going to get fired, because Bischoff implies that she'll be fired when, like, he does, like, so amazing with his bombshell. And she's like, bitch, no. I'm the only GM around here that runs shit, and I've got a bombshell of my own. So we've got dueling bombshells.
Yeah, there's bombshells aplenty.
Yeah, bombshell tonight!
But
I
put in my notes that Steph and Eric compared the thickness of their metaphors when they're talking about blood and then money and then I think water's in there.
No, Urine.
Oh, that's right. Urine. Half right. Urine's in there.
Yeah. Steph tells Bischoff that, you know, don't forget, I'm a McMahon. And you know what they say? Blood's thicker than, well, I guess in your case, urine. And then Bischoff corrects her, which I think is one of the funniest things when people do that in promos. Like, if someone intentionally, like, says a lie differently, it's like, nope, what I think you meant was... But he reminds her that it's actually blood's thicker than water, and then he says that money is much thicker than blood.
Which was going to be the title of his second book.
Money is much thicker than blood. I would read a book called that. Especially if it was by Eric Bischoff. He'd spin us some more fairy tale yarns, such as found in his Controversy Creates Cash book.
Yeah, well, you know, it wasn't the Mick Foley line that ended WCW.
Oh, of course not. You know, actually, I've gained a lot of respect for Bischoff since watching the Monday Night Wars show.
You know, I still have yet to check it out.
You definitely need to. Like, there's a couple of select episodes that are really good. Like, it's not... Overall, I don't think it's one of their best productions, and I don't think they needed to spend as much time as they did on everything.
Yeah.
But there's an episode, like, basically strictly devoted to Bischoff. And he talks about how... he fought tooth and nail not to have Thunder, like, be a thing. Because he realized, like, guys would have to, like, work the weekend house show tour, then turn around and work Nitro, and then turn around and work Thunder. And he knew that it wouldn't work. And then Kevin Nash, like, pops up and tells a story about, oh, getting booked on Thunder was just the kiss of death. Like, if you went in and saw that you were booked on Thunder, it's like, oh, I can't work tonight. I tweaked my knee on Monday. And then it cuts back to Bischoff basically saying, like, Thunder didn't work because none of the top guys would work on it. It was so sad because, like, he was just trying his goddamn best. Well, I mean, at that point, probably not trying his best. But, you know, he tried to do the right thing business-wise by not making these guys do another show.
Right.
And then... when he was obligated to by his corporate owners, it's just like, oh, yeah, no, fuck you. I know you pay us millions of dollars every year, but I hurt my knee. See you in 6 months.
So they actually got Bischoff to do new interviews for this one?
Yeah, there's a couple of new interview segments with him.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, I think that was a door that was open when they re-signed the Hulkster to his Legends deal.
Yeah.
You know what?
Continue, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, like, I don't know how much more mileage they really could have gotten out of that 12-year-old footage of him that they've consistently used forever.
Yeah. it's about...
like him with the old Raw.
Yeah, it's about threadbare by now.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I swear to, like, they've used that for so many segments that I could probably just quote full parts of it. Like, just because I've seen it, like, 800 times. Like, here's Eric Bischoff sitting in front of the 2003 Raw set talking about fucking ECW.
Yeah, which...
but, yeah, no, they...
he has no business talking about, but sure.
Yeah, they got Bischoff to talk about some weird stuff, but it's good that they're finally getting new interview stuff with him.
Yeah.
Because, as we saw in this segment, really just... 2003 Bischoff was kind of hit or miss, mic-wise.
Yeah, it seems like it.
But I dug the money is much thicker than Bloodline, so good on him. At least he didn't talk about piss.
Yeah.
So speaking...
Only Brock Lesnar can get away with that.
Yeah, only Brock Lesnar's gimmick is piss, Steph. You back off.
Yeah.
But speaking of human waste...
yeah.
We've got Sean O'Hare. God damn it. Like, I try to come up with segues, and sometimes they don't work for me.
But this one worked.
Yeah, like, people, like, this is a gimmick that gets so fucking romanticized online nowadays. Like, oh man, Sean O'Hare's devil's advocate gimmick could have been really something special. I want you to point to me the specific part of this guy being like, don't go to church. If there's God... he'll hang out with you on your couch while you're watching.
Is that what the gimmick was supposed to be? A devil's advocate?
Yeah, that was pretty much it. Like, he would do other videos, like other segments like this where he was, you know, going against conventional thought and wisdom. And I don't understand how that's supposed to translate to a wrestling gimmick.
I don't know. He pisses somebody off and then, I don't know. I thought he was some shitty self-help guru.
Yeah, no, he was, he would just cut weird promos, and then they realized he was really not that good as a singles competitor.
Okay.
And,
like, the promos were it seemed decent, at least this video.
Yeah. Yeah, no, like, Sean O'Hare, as a performer, had a lot of untapped potential, I think. Like, he came across as really natural on the mic, when he would get to cut promos, like, but at the same time, he almost had the Roman Reigns thing going for him, except he was way less impressive. But, like, he was really good in pre-tape videos, and he could occasionally do an alright promo live, and he was really underwhelming in the ring. And they didn't take the time to put the effort in to get him to where he needed to be. And I think that's unfortunate, because he could have gone really far had he been properly tooled for it. And he's always had a great look, so...
Yeah, he looked all right. He looks better now that I realize he's not a self-help guru.
Right? I wouldn't take advice from a dude with that haircut.
Not at all. You gotta get your haircut in order first before you start throwing advice my way.
Right? Fix those bangs you got going on, bro. Boy bangs are not cool.
Yeah.
Public service announcement for Hog Jefferson.
Boy bands, however, can be cool.
Hell yeah. My 24th birthday was, let's see, today, we're recording this on the 21st, just to date the show for everybody listening. So my birthday was this past Friday night, and the more intoxicated I became, like, the more just ridiculous stuff I demanded, well, that was demanded of me to be played on the jukebox, and I demanded be played. And so the whole bar had to sit through What's New Pussycat, which they got into, and then we played Bye 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 by NSYNC.
Okay, of course.
And that's a classic. I've still got that album on my MP3 player. That's not even a joke. And then we decided, we're like, we're going to just see how crazy we can take this 90s party. And we put on Wannabe by the Spice Girls.
Oh,
and
no.
The answer to how crazy can we make this party was two girls danced on top of the bar. And one of them, like, whacked her head on the light while trying to get up there. And the light just stopped functioning.
Well, at least she didn't stop functioning.
That's true. So, to anybody affected by that, I'm sorry. But at the same time, I'm kind of not. Like, I don't know. But it was a good time. So, back to the matter at hand, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really trying to avoid it. Because next up, we've got the World Heavyweight title match presented by Raw.
It's a doozy.
Oh, man. And, like, the angle leading up to this was weird, too, because, like, I don't know how familiar everyone listening, or even you are, really, with what Scott Steiner was as a singles competitor in WCW.
No, I remember it very well.
Okay, good. Because those of you who know will recall that his gimmick was basically angry megalomaniac that will hit anything.
Mm-hmm.
And WWE saw that and thought, well, you know what? Let's take that gimmick, make it face.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Angry megalomaniac that'll hit anything, face.
Similar to what they did with Nathan Jones, apparently.
Yeah, like psychopathic criminal, angry narcissist, whatever. All face gimmicks are in this book. But so the angle leading into it, like, Steiner got signed by Raw after being courted by both shows. And apparently he got a title match as a signing bonus, which we learned in the recap video. Like, they didn't explicitly say it's a signing bonus, but he's like, he's got a contract. He's like, this contract says I get a title shot. And Eric Bischoff was like, okay, we'll do it at the Royal Rumble.
I love that for a second there, you made him sound like Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't do like the angry steroid voice.
No, I don't. I don't even want to attempt to do a Scott Steiner.
Yeah, because that would just, the odds would be.
I can do like not, he's fat, but that's about it.
Exactly. Like that's the classic Steiner. That's really the only one you need to do. That one and I've wrestled a lot of countries. Okay, sure, I believe you. But actually, the first part of this video basically just served to remind us, hey guys, look how awesome Triple H is.
Yeah, which seems like something that happened a lot from 02 to about 05.
Oh yeah, that was, that like, if SmackDown's theme at the time was Will Brock Lesnar kill Paul Heyman, Raw's theme at the time was, look at how awesome Triple H is, just all the time.
Yeah, and this is the feud that leads up to the much maligned Booker T feud.
Oh, yes. See, I'm trying to line up like potential co-hosts for future episodes just so that I can be prepared for any situation. And I was going to ask one of my good buddies, DJM, who's been on this show before, to do an episode. And then I realized that, like, the next one I've got coming up is No Way Out 2003, which is probably going to feature Matt from the Yappapie Pod, or the Yappa Podcast, if any of you guys heard my appearance on there. And I was going to ask DJM, I'm like, oh, do you want to do WrestleMania 19? And then I realized that, like, that man has a violent reaction to the results of that match. Like, just absolutely brutal. Like, to the point where, like, he just buries Triple H all the time. And watching, like, this video and watching this match, it's entirely understandable why somebody would want to bury Triple H from this time period.
Yeah.
Like, in the lead-up, they had an arm wrestling contest and a pose down.
Just to get it really metrosexual up in here.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, we're going to get to the metrosexual part. Because after they had a pose down, they did a push-up contest.
Yeah, literally staring at each other.
Yeah, literally staring at each other.
The sexual tension was thick.
Oh, it was palpable. But just a fun Hawk Jefferson fact, the local radio station, because I lived near Phoenix, Arizona at this time, and that's where that episode of Raw took place. And the local radio station was giving away tickets. Number 10 caller. I was goddamn number 9.
You missed out.
I missed out on seeing the push-up contest in person, you guys, along with the pose down.
History in the making.
Yeah, one of the greatest angles of all the time.
Yeah.
Because we got the moment where Scott Steiner came out and beat the clothes off Triple H. Until he was in these, like, weird man panties.
Yeah.
Like, I'm pretty sure I've seen those on Not a Dude before. So, I mean, I think that raises a lot of questions about Stephanie, personally.
Well, hey.
And a lot about Triple H.
They've probably toned down the panties at this point.
Actually, I was gonna say that, like, the best thing about Triple H at the time was his attire. Because he came out in really slick red, you know, trunks for this match.
Right.
But then I remember just how often it was alluded to that he wore women's underpants. So, like, that's... I don't know what they were doing, but I don't like it.
And as we'll learn later in this match, Scott Steiner's not too far off.
Oh, no, not far off at all. I just think it's weird that, like, they're like of all the things they could do to try to make Triple H look like a fool, they're like, oh, we're going to imply that he likes to wear women's undergarments. Like, you know who also wears women's clothes and is a badass? Edward Izzard. That will keep me from ever, like, being able to, like, boo somebody for the reason that they wanted me to.
Yeah. Also, Goldust.
Yes, Goldust. Goldust, man. Fucking right.
Well,
that guy.
I mean, he did. He doesn't anymore. That'd be great if 55-year-old Dustin Rhodes was just wearing some women's clothing.
That's just a great callback for one segment where we have to see that horrifying visual. But this was kind of weird because the champ came out first. Not something that they do often, but I mean, it's always weird to me when it happens.
Yeah, especially in world title matches.
Yeah, like, bring the champion out second, make it look like he's the big deal.
Right.
But Steiner came out to a really good pop.
Yeah, that will change.
And, yeah, that did not last long. And they did a really great close-up on a sign in the audience where, like, they had multiple letters, and they each had a letter, and it was trying to spell Steiner. But a couple of the letters must have taken off to get nachos or something, because the only ones that were there were Sten. S-T-E space N. And they were still so stoked to be on TV, so good for them. So these guys, I mean, they started off kind of promising. I mean, there was pretty good heat. They get face-to-face and just fucking start throwing hands.
Right.
And then Scott Steiner started working heel. like he was clubbering on Triple H. And
because that's like all he knows how to work at this point.
Yeah, basically.
His body has gotten so, like, huge that he can't do the moves he used to do when he was in the Steiner Brothers.
Yeah, like, Scott Steiner at this point had all the mobility of, like, a resurrected mummy.
Probably less.
Like, yeah. All he could really manage was, like, belly-to-belly suplex and clubber.
And boy, is there a lot of both of those.
Oh, there was so much. Like
Lesnar would, like, calm it down with the suplexes.
Just, can you take it down a notch, buddy? Just a notch. And, you know, I've said a lot of shit about Triple H, but I will say one thing. He tried in this match.
So
he
hard.
Tried
I felt bad
really
for him.
Hard.
Like, I never
yeah.
feel bad for him.
Yeah, like, that's what I took away from this match, too. I'm like, man, Triple H is being made to look fucking horrible in this match. Just because, like, Steiner would no-sell, like, half of his offense. And then Triple H would get a look on his face like, you motherfucker.
He was probably the dawning on him that he had to work another match with this guy.
He's like, oh, man, this is a two-month program. And here I was thinking he was competent.
Yeah. Like, even when Steiner tries to do other moves, like, the one that pops to my mind is he does the shittiest Boston crab I've ever seen.
Yes, that was something that I noted, too. Just a really awful-looking Boston crab, and Triple H just kind of easily straightens his spine out and crawls across the ropes. Like, I think that's the quickest, like, oh, is the heel going to tap spot I've ever seen? Because, like, Triple H hits the mat, Steiner puts it in the Boston crab, and, like, 3 seconds later, Triple H has gone from the middle of the ring to the ropes.
Yeah, he's just like, nah, I'm not even going to bother selling this.
Yep, not selling this. Fuck you. Which I can't say as I blame him, because, like, it really became apparent at a point in this match that not only was Steiner really limited in what he could do offensively, but that limit extended to what Triple H could do offensively, because, like, Steiner would hit him with, like, belly-to-bellies, and then he'd, like, club on him, and then, like, Triple H would do a couple of, like, really basic moves, and then work a neckbreaker. Like, there was, like, 3 neck breakers for Triple H. There was actually one point where JR, well, Triple H hits a neck breaker, but, like, Steiner looked to be out of place.
Yeah.
And it comes across as more of a, as what JR calls a, oh, that's another neck breaker from the champ, or kind of looked like a diamond cutter.
Yeah.
which led to... to me, dubbing that the turd cutter.
Yeah, that's the...
which is officially the grossest thing I've said on this show.
The turd cutter, yeah.
I will say this, though. The best worker in this match was Ric Flair.
Definitely. He didn't even have to do anything.
He did so many just great spots where, like, Triple H was choking Steiner in the corner with his boot at one point, and then Earl Hebner, fuck him, backed Triple H off of him, and Flair, like, came over and started just choking the shit out of Steiner with his jacket.
Yeah.
Which I think for like probably is something Flair wanted to do for quite a while.
Yes, I don't think he was acting there. I think he was just literally choking Scott Steiner.
Literally, with his, as JR put it, men's warehouse jacket.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter, he bought it at men's warehouse.
Yeah, I miss JR from this era.
Oh, man, JR this era was so good.
Even Lawler was still up to par. He'd always have a couple funny lines now and again, unlike now where he's so very dire.
Right. This was a really good show for, like, for commentary in general. But, like, I have to really point to it being a high spot, at least so far in this series, for Lawler's commentary.
Yeah, there was, like, I didn't mention it, but I think it was during the tag match. It's the only quote I have of his, but he says that he's as confused by the events as a toddler in a topless bar.
Yes, before it became a cliche, that was an awesome line. I've got a soft spot for this specific team because, like, they were the commentary team of my youth.
Yeah.
Like them along with, Tony Schiavone, Bobby Heenan, and Mike Tenay together. Like, those were the two commentary teams that I grew up with.
Right.
And it's impossible for me to actually, like, actively dislike them.
Yeah, for me, it was always them and then, of course, Michael Cole and Taz. And then even towards the end a little bit, some Joey Styles and Taz.
Oh, man, Joey Styles and Taz were actually a very fairly solid team.
Yeah, they were pretty all right. I actually wished Styles would come back and do some commentary, but I don't blame him for not wanting to in the way it's run now.
Yeah, definitely not. Well, and he's doing really good work for the website.
Yeah.
Like, keep it up, Joey Styles. Like, I may not think you should be allowed to vote or, like, express political opinion at all, but then again, I don't think most people should be allowed to do that.
Yeah.
But, man, keep up that good work on the website.
Yeah, it's not like Vince McMahon doesn't have some questionable political thoughts.
Oh, definitely. He's probably a fucking lunatic about it, too.
He probably rants to Triple H about it, like, any chance he gets.
And Triple H is like, God, Vince, I don't care.
I just want to talk about NXT real quick.
Look, I've already donated to Hillary, because Triple H strikes me as the type.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear about it. And Vince is like, God damn it! Because you won't listen to me, we're going to make the Ascension a shitty 80s tag team. We're going to ruin all your NXT work as soon as they're brought up to the main roster.
Adrian Neville's going to be Mighty Mouse, and you're going to like it.
God damn it. Because that's how Vince ends all his statements, according to me.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another great spot with Flair in this one where, like, Triple H gets up on the second rope, and Flair, like, turns to the crowd like, come on! Come on! Like, he wants him to cheer Triple H, and they pop huge for him. And then he jumps off the turnbuckle, like, right into, like, the 47th suplex of the match. And then the crowd's just immediately like, boo!
Yeah, at this point,
but the face had the advantage.
Yeah, at this point, they had turned on Steiner because he was working so shitty.
Oh, they turned viciously on him. And, like, we may have been kidding Boston a little bit earlier, but I would be lying if I said that Boston doesn't usually have a really great and usually pretty smart wrestling crowd.
Yeah.
Like, this is definitely, like, this was a really great audience because they reacted to everything, and they took a shit on this one.
You think they were fine with it until Steiner disgraced the Boston crab?
Yeah. Like, as soon as it's like, oh, he's trying to get over using our move. And he's doing terrible at it. Fuck him!
Yeah.
That's the Boston spirit.
Mm-hmm. Eventually, Trips is just, like, done with the match.
Yeah, you see, just fuck this. He, like, grabs Earl Hebner and throws him to the outside. And actually, at one point, too, Triple H has a little bit of a cut.
Yeah.
After taking a belt shot, because he and Flair just tried to fucking leave.
Yeah, he takes a single belt shot, and he takes a cue from his mentor, Ric Flair, and just blades for it.
Yeah, and it's not even like a big blade job. It's like they told him to do color, and he just did it the most lazy way possible.
Because the match really didn't deserve
didn't
it at all.
No, it was like a half a blade job, maybe. Yeah.
It seems like in this era, every main event match had to have some color in it.
Oh, just about, yeah. Even if it was hard way, like we'll see in the next match.
Yeah, especially Triple H matches. I remember each of the three matches he had with Batista after during WrestleMania 21 and after, he was bleeding profusely by the end of all of them.
Yeah, actually, like now that you mention it, I can't think of many, if any, Triple H, like, main event matches from this era that didn't result in he and probably his opponent bleeding.
when he decided to do the Four Horsemen knockoff, he went full throttle.
Oh yeah, he tried to make every one of his matches into an NWA title match.
Yeah.
But Flair actually tries to get Earl Hebner to stop the match due to blood loss.
Yeah.
Which I thought was, you know, kind of hilarious, especially considering how little blood there actually was. And at one point, Triple H just grabs Earl Hebner and tosses him to the outside.
Yeah.
And Earl gets in, and he's going to DQ, and he's like, no, you got to fight. And I'm like, really, Earl? You're the biggest heel in the ring now because you're making this continue.
Yeah, and by this point, Steiner has begun showing off his thong to us.
Yes. Oh, my God. There's certain things people should not have to see. And Scott Steiner's velvet thong is one of them.
Well, yeah. Yeah, so it's kind of interesting that we were supposed to mock Triple H for his attire, and Scott Steiner shows off his own.
Yeah, I'm pretty certain that's... Yeah. Yeah, Scott Steiner's the one you should be pointing fingers at, WWE. Get your shit together.
But then, Triple H just takes out his sledgehammer.
Yeah, he grabs his sledgehammer, and when the fans realize he's got a sledgehammer, they're like, yeah, fuck yeah, hit him with that! Like, they pop huge for the sledgehammer, and, like, Triple H gut shot Steiner, and then they DQ it.
And then Earl's like, well, I guess I have no choice this time.
Right, like, I love this, we're gonna tease a DQ finish, but it's not gonna happen, but here's a DQ finish!
Yeah, they do this, it's like almost 20-minute match that feels like 2 hours.
Oh, yeah.
And they ended on a DQ.
Yeah, 18 minutes and 14 seconds, that felt like half the fucking show. Like, just, it's such a fuck finish. And the Boston crowd rightfully shit on this all the way through.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Honestly, I don't blame them for cheering for Triple H, because at a certain point in the match, it flipped and he became the face.
Yeah, no, yeah, Steiner was healing big time by being so horrible.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It just, like, he would hit a move and be like, I'm the man! Nobody really wants to hear that, buddy.
Yeah, and then he comes back and beats up Triple H some more, and the crowd is just shitting all over him as he does it. Like, he does the face, like, if he throws his hands up in the air and he poses, and the entire audience is just shitting all over him.
Right, like, he hits Triple H and Flair with hammer shots, then fucking puts Triple H to the Steiner recliner. They bring out four refs to pull him off of him, and Sergeant Slaughter's there, too. And Eric Bischoff comes out, and Eric Bischoff's just selling it like, why? Why did you do that? Like, you killed him!
Look at what you did! And then he's, like, rubbing his nose in it.
Exactly, and, like, the Boston crowd is having none of this shit.
Well, it doesn't help that the Steiner recliner just looks like total shit.
Oh, yeah, it looks terrible. Just get your shit together, Scott Steiner, 12 years ago.
And then, like, he poses again, and then he goes to leave. He stops and just sort of stands there, and then goes up on the turnbuckle and poses.
Yeah, and then nobody wanted another photo opportunity of Big Papa Pump's fucking pose. Nobody.
Not until he went to TNA.
Exactly. Then that's when he fucking just became incredible.
Yeah. But not in the ring.
Oh, no, not in the ring.
he would stay at about this level.
Yeah, for the rest of his career.
Yeah.
Which is probably still going.
I'm almost positive he's doing some backyard indie right now.
Oh, Scott Steiner will die in the ring.
Yeah.
Probably, like, and it'll be his own fault, too. Like, he'll try a Steiner screwdriver and, like, somehow land on his fucking head.
Yeah, he'll Sid Vicious his head.
He'll Sid Vicious his head. I love it. So, next up, we actually have a good title match.
Yeah, Kurt Angle versus Hardcore Holly.
Exactly. Like, I'm not going to lie to you guys. Like, if you're not comfortable with Chris Benoit matches, that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, it's understandable.
And if you... Yeah, it's totally understandable. Like, I kind of feel weird watching Benoit matches.
There's actually a moment in this match, not the match, in the commentary, that makes me made me cringe a little, because Cole mentions that Benoit was sacrificing his family.
Oh, yeah. I heard, yeah, that was disturbing.
So I was like, maybe that isn't the best in hindsight.
Yeah, better pick your words better in the future, Cole.
Yeah, come
somebody
on,
might
pass,
actually
pass
murder
Cole.
Someone. Yeah, pass Cole, get your shit together. But, like I said, if you just can't watch Benoit matches, that's understandable. And if, like, people enjoying Benoit matches makes you uncomfortable, well, A, fuck off. Other people's opinions don't really matter to you.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And B, you should probably just skip this part of the show.
Yeah, come back for the Rumble.
Yeah, come back for the Rumble because, like, watching this match again, and every time I watch it, I'm reminded of why this is one of my absolute favorite matches of all time.
Now, I haven't actually seen this match until I watched it yesterday, but honestly, I feel like I should be a little ashamed for not having watched this match previously.
Yeah, like, this match, like, obviously it doesn't get a lot of mention from fans because Chris Benoit is involved.
Mm-hmm.
But if you haven't seen this match and you can watch a Chris Benoit match, just, like, stop this right now before we start talking about it. Go and watch it on the WWE Network, available for $9.99 a month, and just then come back to this.
Yeah.
Because, like, I actually noted at one point, this is one of the very few times I've ever noted it, this action was setting such a blistering pace with so much happening in so little time that I couldn't keep up at one point.
Yeah.
And these guys were just, it was just an absolute just fucking stiff technical masterpiece with, like, just fantastic spots, including a DDT on the apron from Benoit, which busts open Angle the hard way.
Yeah.
Which I always thought looked more impressive than the whole blade job.
Mm-hmm.
We got a lot more clubber in, actually, because this was one of the instances where, you know, ever the technical perfectionist, Kurt Angle, just went full-on brawler at certain points.
Yeah.
Like, this match told a spectacular story. Like, Benoit wanted the title, and Angle wanted to keep it. And yeah, that was all they needed.
Yeah, they didn't need any pose downs or any stripping Kurt Angle to a thong.
Yeah, like, basically the build to this match was Big Show had a rematch against Kurt Angle on SmackDown for the title. And then Lesnar injured Angle. And so General Manager Stephanie McMahon made a match between Benoit and Big Show to decide the number one contender. Benoit won. Angle and Team Angle spent a couple weeks beating the shit out of Benoit. Benoit came back, murdered... Well, no, fuck, I don't want to say that. Came back and beat Otto. Yeah, I'm so used to using that phrase for Brock Lesnar that now it's just second nature.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, he came back and, I mean, he cleared house of the heels and looked really solid going in, and that was it.
Yeah. Can we take a moment to appreciate Team Angle, though?
Oh, God, yes. Team Angle is one of my favorite tag teams of all time.
Even when Benjamin and Haas were in Ring of Honor, I still enjoyed them a ton.
Oh, definitely. Like, those two guys, like, even from day one, you could tell that they had an incredible amount of chemistry with each other.
Yeah, now, unfortunately, Haas is, I think, retired.
Hey, if that's what gets him through. Charlie Haas and I have actually, we talked on Twitter once about Black Dynamite. And that's, like, that was when I knew that I'd made the proper choice in being a fan of him for a long while. Because, like, I love Black Dynamite, you guys.
And
Charlie Haas does, too. Well, yeah. We were talking about people interrupting our kung fu.
Right, exactly.
Which we don't like. We don't like that.
No, nobody should.
But so this match, like I said, there was a lot of really fast-paced action. I'm not going to walk you through step by step. We've already mentioned the fucking amazing, like, basic spot of a DDT on the apron, just looking devastating.
Yeah.
There was a lot of near falls in this, a lot of just back and forth technical work. Like, there was a spot where Benoit hit two German suplexes, and then Angle transitioned and hit one of his own, and then Benoit transitioned and hit the third for his sequence.
Yeah.
And then Benoit blew his nose on Kurt Angle, and that was pretty gross. But we did get, like, we got the tease of his headbutt, which Angle countered with his incredible pop-up suplex. And, like, the last, God, 5 minutes of this match was really just one long sequence.
Yeah.
Like, this is really the only part I'm going to break down for you. Because, like, it was just, I was marking out watching it 12 years after the fact. And it's a match I've seen, like, 50 times.
No, yeah, I was definitely, I became a mark again. Just for this
Yeah,
match.
Definitely. Yeah, like, Angle tried an angle slam, which got countered into a crossface. Which Angle got the ropes, and the Boston crowd was just, I mean, they were eating this match up.
Yeah.
Like, they reacted to everything big time. They wanted Benoit to win.
So bad.
Desperately.
Like they deflated just slightly when he tapped.
Yeah, but it got, like, this match got a standing ovation.
Yeah.
Like, that's so hard to accomplish anywhere.
Especially and, what they just followed.
Yeah, like, they followed possibly one of the worst matches of all time. And then they had, like, just this incredible match where, like, the ending sequence, like I said, Angle got to the ropes off of crossface. And then Benoit put him in an ankle lock, which Kurt Angle countered into an ankle lock, which Benoit countered into a crossface, which turned into a pin, which went back to a crossface, which turned into a goddamn angle slam for a near fall. Benoit rolled through out of an ankle lock and managed to get a near fall on, you know, on an odd roll-up. I didn't even know what the hell to call it because it was just like, it was a wheelbarrow roll-up.
Yeah.
That's what it's called now. Like, they traded more Germans, and Benoit, at one point, Benoit hits a release German on Angle, which Angle sells by flipping and landing on his face.
Yeah.
Benoit capitalizes with a fucking headbutt where he goes three quarters of the way across the ring. That's the most uncomfortable spot in any Benoit match.
Oh, definitely.
Like, it's, and it hurts too. Well, it's weird because it's so impressive. And at the same time, like, you know, you can't really be like, oh man, that was awesome. Because, like, it wasn't.
Yeah. It was
not in
horrible.
The end.
And there's a reason nobody does diving headbutts anymore.
Except for Daniel Bryan, occasionally.
Well, he doesn't fly halfway across the ring, either.
That's true.
He actually, 9 times out of 10, he connects.
Yeah, doesn't just, like, slam his face into the mat. But, there was a spot where a crossface got turned into an alley-oop into the corner, and I think that's the only time an alley-oop has ever looked impressive.
Yeah, probably.
Which got, it was followed up with an
interestingly enough, because we were just talking about Big Show doing the alley-oop.
Yeah, see? That's a callback, kids. That's what we call that in this industry. But,
In this business.
But, Benoit locks in a crossface again, which gets turned into an ankle lock. Benoit tries desperately to roll through, can't get out. He tries to kick Angle away. Every time Angle gets even, like, the least bit of distance between him and Benoit, he was immediately back on the ankle before he eventually grapevines the leg. Benoit taps, 1949. Go watch it. Just do it.
It's a great match, first off. I've seen their two, I don't know if you want to count it as their two other matches. They're two big time matches when the three way with Jericho at WrestleMania 16 and then the one on one at 17. And this one, I think, blew both of them out of the water.
Oh yeah, this match was easily the strongest of what these two did together as opponents. And yeah, like I said, I understand not being able to watch Benoit matches, but this is like, if you haven't seen it, you're depriving yourself of a classic.
Yeah, the match is longer and 10 times better than Steiner and Trips.
Yes. Yeah, like I said, 19 minutes, 49 seconds, fucking classic. And speaking of classics, we get an ad for WWE Anthology, which I only noted because, like, I bought this pay-per-view with money that I got for my 12th birthday. The very next day, my mom and I went out and did shopping, and I bought the WWE Anthology CD. Or maybe it wasn't the very next day, but it was very close. I did buy both of those things with birthday money. So I just wanted to make note of that. Still got it. Still a solid part of my collection.
It seems like it should be like a solid part of your collection. That seems like a huge, like, pretty solid deal.
Oh yeah, dude, 3 discs of the best fucking music they ever put together, including Tell Me a Lie and I'll Be Your Hero. Like, holy hell. Can't beat that, you guys. Not with a rubber hose.
Certainly not. Plus, it has my favorite Christian theme, which is the one he uses for this.
I love the opera theme. The Christian opera theme is easily one of the best things WWE ever did.
Christian just might be the single wrestler who never had a entrance theme.
Yeah, I don't think he had, like, there are certain mixes of his themes that I like better than other ones, but I don't think he's ever had a bad theme, even in TNA.
No, yeah, he's always had solid music.
Yeah, and if you can escape TNA without having a bad theme, you've done something fucking incredible.
Yeah, that's Bobby Roode. That's the only person who has a good theme in TNA.
Pretty fucking much, and that's upsetting, because they used to have some decent ones.
Oh, no, wait, no. I think I remember that they changed his theme to make it, like, something country.
God damn it, TNA. Even when we want to compliment you, you won't let us.
They refuse.
They refuse to be successful. All right. So next up, we've got the main event, the Royal Rumble. No fucking video to hype this. We've got Fink in the ring explaining the rules, going at 90-second intervals, and we already know who 1 and 2 are. Shawn Michaels comes out first, obviously. They're playing up the 95 Rumble, like, you know, oh, Shawn could do it again. And then we get this really great spot where Jericho's music hits, and, you know, there's the pose in the entryway, and then he turns around, and it's Christian.
It's Christian.
And then Jericho attacks Triple H. Goddamn, I'm still stuck on a little bit before. But he attacks Shawn Michaels from behind. And it takes less than 90 seconds for Jericho to basically murder him.
Yeah. I think the commentators missed a good call by calling him Christian Jericho. But that's just
me. Yes. Yes. We support puns heavily on this show.
As you should.
And Christian Jericho, I think, falls into that category. Man, imagine if they had just been like Mizdow and The Miz. Christian had his own personality.
That would have been golden. They would have given him the title right away.
That's true. Although we've expressed love on this show before for the tag team of Vitamin C. No matter what they did, it was always amazing.
Oh, of course.
So Shawn Michaels gets waffled with a chair. Starts bleeding. Chris Nowitzki comes out third, and he just, like, hangs out outside and lets Jericho do his thing. HBK gets eliminated. Boom. He's out.
Yeah, he's the first one out.
Guess we won't be seeing him again tonight, huh? Wink.
Yeah,
wink.
He never shows up again. He just goes to the back, drives home.
Yeah. Goes to the pay window.
Yeah, goes to the pay window and leaves.
Rey Mysterio comes out fourth, because this match was really oddly paced, because the early portions of it went pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And then the ring just filled up.
Literally, like, and then just elimination after elimination.
Yeah, like, there was a lot going on early on. Like, this is going to be a weird, like, portion of the review where it's really just going to sound like quite a bit of us being like, this guy came out, this guy got eliminated. But, like, when you get to a point where there's, like, 10 guys in the ring, there's not a lot anybody can do. So it was a lot of, like, it was very similar to the 2014 Rumble in that respect.
Right.
But at the same time, it told a much better story.
Can we talk a second about Christopher Nowinski? What the hell is this guy's deal? Like, is he supposed to just be, like, some college frat dude? Or not frat. Well, he's supposed to be, like, some Harvard-educated asshat.
Yeah, basically. His gimmick was, I went to Harvard, I'm smart, I'm better than you.
Okay. Because I enjoyed it, but I don't remember anything about Christopher Nowinski.
Yeah, he had an unfortunately short run, which has been well documented, you know, with the concussion and that ending his career. And he's done a lot of really fantastic work bringing attention to the dangers of concussions in sports since then.
Well, I guess I guess I have to like him even more now.
Yeah, like, he was a fantastic performer, and another one that I think could have gone really far had he been able to have a longer run. But at the same time, he's done just a lot of really great shit since then that I don't think he would have done otherwise. So, you know, it's a bad way for things to get accomplished, but I'm glad that he was the guy to shine a light on this stuff.
Yeah.
Then Rey Mysterio, like I said, Rey Mysterio's out fourth. He and Y2J have a really good fast-paced segment here. And then Nowitzki runs in and just takes advantage of Rey Mysterio, having his back turned.
Yeah.
That's good heel work. And for a guy that was basically his rookie. Yeah, he was a natural, and this was his rookie year. So that puts kind of this into perspective for you. Edge came out five. He and Rey Mysterio were a tag team, or had recently been a tag team.
Which I totally forgot about.
Yeah, they had a couple of really great tag matches.
This seemed to be the era where both Rey Mysterio and Edge were just teaming up with anybody.
Pretty much, yeah. Like, they didn't have a lot to do with the guys because, like, they were very clearly some of the more over people on the roster.
Yeah.
But they were so focused on pushing Kurt Angle and Lesnar in those top spots on SmackDown that Rey and Edge kind of suffered from it. Like, Edge really got lucky by having that 2006 run.
Right.
Because after missing the boat on pulling the trigger with him as a main eventer during this time, when he was easily over enough to do it, he just was not well received in 2004 until he got that really good start on the heel run.
And until he fucked over Matt Hardy.
Yeah. He actually had a really great feud with Shawn Michaels, which is going to be talked about on the show in several years timeline-wise, so
yeah,
look forward to that, I guess, you guys.
I recall Edge. I always think of Edge as a bigger deal because when I started watching, he was becoming a huge deal. He had won Money in the Bank not too long after I had gotten into it, or not too long, like the first WrestleMania I watched.
Yeah, and Edge is one of those guys that I'm always going to look to as being, like, one of my guys.
Yeah, same here.
Because I was a huge Edge fan. Like, I attended No Way Out 2009 and marked out so hard I almost threw up when he won the World Heavyweight title. That's not even a joke. I was so excited and just so, like, all over it that I nearly vomited from excitement. And all because a heel won the title.
And, I mean, the guy who gives us the live sex celebration can't be all bad.
Exactly. He's a true gentleman. But, yeah, so Edge, like I said, he's always going to be one of those guys that I look at as being one of my guys. Because I watched, like, he was one of the first guys I remember debuting after I started watching. And Christian's another one of those. And, like, I got to see their whole big-time career from start to finish. And I can never hate them. And for stuff like when Edge came in, followed by Christian at number six, and Christian, you know, he's like, come on, let's team up. And he, like, hugs Edge. And then Edge just spears the shit out of him.
Yeah, these are the type of moments that the Rumble's sort of made for.
Definitely. Like, just goofy interactions that really wouldn't make sense any other time.
Just, yeah, drawing on old continuity that you may have forgotten about. Stuff that exactly. WWE doesn't do too well nowadays. I mean, speaking they probably didn't old... hear either, but...
Yeah, but speaking of old continuity that people probably forgot about, at this point, Edge and Christian were still brothers.
Yeah. Yeah, they were still hitting on that one pretty hard.
Yeah, like, just... Like, they reminded us, like, 8 or 9 times.
Yeah, every time they looked at each other, JR would just go, and there's Edge and Christian, they're brothers.
They're brothers. Like, we get it, Jim, we get it. Just tone it down a bit. So Nowitzki tried to dump both of the faces out and ended up getting beat up. Chavo comes in at 7, has a really just fantastic lucha sequence for Rey Mysterio.
Yeah.
And Rey basically becomes the boss of the ring at this point, because he's beaten on all the heels within, like, striking distance.
Not so fantastic is Chavo's entrance music.
Oh, I love Chavo's entrance music.
This isn't the one that I grew up with, the Ooh Chavo theme.
Oh yeah, see, this was when Chavo still had his, like, somewhat almost rip off of his WCW theme.
Okay.
Yeah, and like that was one that I remember, like, that I'll, like, find myself humming, like, his WCW theme. So this one was just fine by me, but Ooh Chavo is definitely the superior theme.
Oh yes.
My brother and I reference that far too often. Or maybe not often enough. Depends on how you feel about that theme.
Or Chavo Guerrero.
Or Chavo. I have also wrestled Chavo. The legendary Chavo Guerrero.
Yes. He gets a lot of flack, but I still enjoy Chavo.
Oh, Chavo is having a fucking resurgence in Lucha Underground, so I'll never be able to hate that guy either.
Yeah. It's impossible.
So Rey is on just a fucking absolute hot streak, and then Jericho dumps him out. Just incredible heat for this. Like, yeah. The fans wanted Rey to be in there, and Jericho's now robbed them of two of their favorites.
And that's not even the end of it.
Oh, no, not even close. Jericho has a fantastic run in this match.
Yeah.
So Tajiri's out 8th. He kicks the shit out of people until Chavo puts him on the ground. Lawler says that Tajiri is his favorite announcer on SmackDown. You mean Funaki. That's what you meant, Lawler. And JR calls him on his shit. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I'll always be a huge mark for Tajiri, too. If I could recount the number of times that I've done an EWR campaign where he's the WWE World Champion.
Oh, yeah. I actually, I'm a big fan of his strikes, to the point where one time my buddy and I were play fighting, you know, and we were like maybe 10 at the time. And this was around the time like Tajiri was just really starting to catch hold in WWF. And I tried to like pull a Tajiri style kick, like without actually hitting him.
Right.
And just full on walloped him in the nose. Just right in the face. So if you're listening to this, fuck you. You hit me in the head with a baseball bat.
So you were wrestling with Sting?
No, I've never turned on Sting. Then again, I've never met him either.
You would probably turn on him instantly if you met him.
Yeah, Real Estate Steve, I'm coming for you. Look out. I'm going to be his next opponent after Triple H. Not really.
Yeah, WrestleMania 32.
WrestleMania 32 in Dallas, me versus Sting. Make it happen, Hawkamaniacs. I don't think they can do that one.
Yeah, they might. Jericho is pushing it.
Yes, we need to get Jericho on board. Jericho and Russo on board first, and then we can really build the momentum for the Sting match.
Yeah.
So, Bill DeMott comes out at 9, which is a disappointment. Because Bill DeMott's in this match.
Yeah, that immediately sinks the rumble a little bit for me.
Just, eh.
It's hard to believe that that's the dude who's training a bunch of people in NXT.
Right, like, I wouldn't look at him, like, out of everybody that they could have gotten for that role and be like, you know, he's definitely going to turn out some top-tier performers.
I wouldn't have, if I was running, like, a backyard indie, I wouldn't have Bill DeMott train my guys.
Nor would I. Like, and we're talking about Bill DeMott, a guy who just a few months later, like, JR tries to put him over as being, like, just a super tough guy, like, in the vein of, like, a Bradshaw or what have you at this point.
And he lasts 2 minutes, by the way.
Yeah, and he lasts 2 minutes. And then cut to, like, 3 months later, and Bill DeMott's, like, gimmick is he shows up on Velocity and tells jokes and has matches. And then cut to, like, 2 months after that, and he's a commentator.
Yep.
So, steep decline for that Bill DeMott.
Legendary run.
Just one of the best runs of any WCW guy, and that's almost not exaggeration. Tommy Dreamer's in at number 10. He brings a trash can and a Singapore cane, and actually a couple of them.
Yeah.
Because he and Edge just cane the shit out of DeMott until he's eliminated. Just get the hell out of here, you son of a bitch.
And it was totally worth it.
Oh, incredibly worth it. That's the best way for Bill DeMott to be handled, in my opinion.
And what's funny is that it's the only, or one of the few eliminations in this one, where the dude just sort of falls out of the ring.
Yeah, just lazily kind of, oh, I guess I'm going over the top rope now.
He's in the middle of the ring getting cane the fuck out of him, and then he just sort of backs up, and falls out.
Yeah, he's like, well, sick of this shit. Going where I can't be hit. Dreamer, though, gets hit with a trash can lid concerto by Christian and Jericho, but not before just stiffing the piss out of Jericho with a cane shot.
Yeah.
And raising him just a massive bloody goose egg, which we get to see when Jericho gets put in the tarantula by Tajiri, which is a dumb idea because you have to go over the top rope to do that, and 90% of the time it ends with you on the apron. This time it just ended with Tajiri on the floor.
Yeah.
So next up, at 11, we've got B2, Bling Bling, Bull Buchanan, whatever the fuck you want to call him.
Yeah,
Man of many names.
I didn't even remember who this guy was. He came out, and I put in my notes, B2, ?
Yeah, he was John Cena's lackey for a while. He was also a tag team partner with the Big Boss Man. So, that's what he's known for. Oh, he was in Right to Censor, too.
Okay.
Not exactly the most legendary of runs for Mr. Barry Buchanan.
Yeah.
He threw a bunch of, he threw a couple of boots, and then he just, like, stood around and basically waited on Edge to eliminate him.
Pretty much.
Chavo almost gets eliminated, but he skins the cat and then just gets speared by Edge. He's eliminated. Edge attempts to eliminate Jericho. Jericho holds on, though, and then manages to eliminate both Edge and Christian. Number 12 is RVD, who just, once again, starts kicking the shit out of Jericho. Like, that seemed to be the theme if you were a face in this match.
Yeah, just beat up Jericho.
Jericho almost gets eliminated, but he holds on. Matt Hardy comes out at 13, and he's got his MF-er, Shannon Moore, with him.
Is that what they called it?
Yep, he was the Mattitude follower. And then a few months later, Crash Holly joined him as their moron.
Because
he followed Shannon Moore.
Right, of course.
God damn. So highbrow around here.
Well, we haven't even gotten to the best one.
Oh, no, not by far yet. RVD almost gets eliminated after a frog splash, after Matt and Jericho's team kind of sort of dissolves. Number 14 is Eddie Guerrero, and the ring is almost starting to get a little bit full now.
Yeah, just full maximum capacity is almost there.
Almost. RVD attempts to eliminate Eddie. Matt saves him for some reason. They beat up RVD. Matt calls for Eddie to do a frog splash, which results in him landing right on RVD's face. Like, holy shit. I kind of felt bad for RVD after that. Then I remember all the people he stiffed the shit out of over the years. And just assumed Eddie was, like, getting revenge for them.
Yeah, I mean, Eddie's wrestled them many times before that, so he's aware. Oh, I think he's quite aware.
Yeah, they always had really good chemistry together, too. Fuck up in my notes here. Matt turns on Eddie with a twist of fat. Oh, I feel bad about that, almost. But then again, like, if you guys have ever seen the picture of Matt Hardy with his face on the Dunkin' Donuts guy.
Yeah, I've seen
that. And it's named Twist of Cakes.
Mm-hmm.
That's me. I did that.
I'm so proud to be talking to this person.
Yeah, like, that's my lasting contribution to the internet, is after the TNA crowd chanted Twist of Cakes at Matt's, I made that, and I don't regret it, and I'm sure Matt's seen it, and if he has, I'm not sorry. You were chubby. Good work on getting it together. You've been awesome the last few years.
Yeah, he's no longer Fat Hardy.
No, he's probably at his peak as a singles competitor recently, and that's something I never thought I'd say about 2009 era Matt Hardy.
Yeah, it's a shame he went back to TNA, because now I don't want to watch him.
Right. I'll never get to see Matt Hardy again, because I don't have Destination America.
I don't either. Yeah, I don't think most people listening do.
Yeah, no, that's the, like, tweet me if you actually do have Destination America, and also let me know if you actually watch TNA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you might just have it, and you might not watch TNA.
You know, I'm a big fan of a Haunting. That's what I watch on Destination America.
Yeah.
Wait, you mean TNA's on there? Fuck.
The big Finding Bigfoot fans.
Oh, man. Everybody should be watching Finding Bigfoot.
Yeah.
That shit's comedy gold.
Anyway. I hope they do, like, interpromotional stuff. Like, Bigfoot comes out to the ring and has to attack, like, Bobby Lashley.
Oh, I can't wait to, like, they host a show in a haunted arena. and Scoob and the gang. I mean, Samoa Joe and the rest of the Beatdown clan have to solve the mystery of who's haunting the arena. And at the end of it, it's revealed to be Vince Russo.
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, it's always Russo in TNA.
If you want to know who it is, chances are it's Russo. If it's not Russo, it's they.
Yeah, and that's a swerve, bro. So number 15 is Jeff Hardy, and he and Matt just immediately start going at it.
Mm-hmm.
Longtime listeners of the show will know that I hate Matt and Jeff, like, wrestling each other, because they oddly have so little chemistry as opponents.
Yeah, just none.
Matt nearly gets eliminated, but Shannon Moore, in probably the spot of the match, like, gets down on all fours and makes himself a stepladder, basically, for Matt to step back into the ring.
Yeah, I thought that was awesome.
Like, it perfectly played the gimmick. And I'm not even that big of a Shannon Moore fan.
Is there anybody who's that big of a Shannon Moore fan?
That's true. Although I do love me some Three Count.
Yeah, of course. I mean, who doesn't? Three Count, unfortunately, is only Shane Helms' second best gimmick.
That's true. Because the hurricane had to happen. Like, What an amazing string of gimmicks that guy had. He went from being, like, boy band to Sugar Shane to the Hurricane to, like, Gregory Helms with the glasses.
Yeah.
Like, what a steep decline.
That was always disappointing. Like, even, I think I was probably 13 when he did that turn. Even then, I was just like, ugh.
Yeah. He did have the best Titantron not given to David Flair, though. It was just like he looks tough, sunglasses, Gregory Helms. That was it.
Yep,
they gave up on that guy so quickly, and it's sad because he was such a talent.
Quicker than Jimmy Wang Yang.
Oh man, which doesn't make sense because he's a big well he's a good friend of Shawn Michaels. You'd think that HBK would take his friends to the top, but
apparently
I guess
not.
Only if they're over 6 foot.
Yeah. Only if Vince likes their look.
Yeah, that's something he learned from Nash.
Mm-hmm.
No vanilla midgets in here.
Yeah, that's why Daniel Bryan's not doing so hot. Actually, he's really hot, but...
Yeah. Jeff hits a twist of fate, which I think it's weird that they were, like, completely different characters on different shows, and they still both use the twist of fate. He goes for a swanton, but Shannon Moore crawls into the ring, puts himself on Matt, and Jeff's just says, fuck it, swantons them both. Rosie's out at 16. He does nothing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Until Test comes out at 17. And he just immediately starts wrecking Matt Hardy.
Yeah, those the testicles is what they call his fans.
Yeah, the testicles in attendance went mild for the appearance of Test.
Yeah, although...
People were way more excited to see Stacy.
Who did he... He eliminated somebody and the crowd got real big on that. He eliminated Jericho. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, he was the one that eliminated Jericho. He took advantage of Shawn Michaels' interference. But still, I mean, it was a... Like, you would think that they were going to strap a rocket to this guy or at least push him further up the card with him eliminating Jericho.
Yeah.
But a little bit later down the timeline, we're going to get to a point where he's just in a feud with Scott Steiner over Stacy Keibler, and he's the heel, and then they become friends because fuck Stacy Keibler. It makes no sense, and it hurt Test in ways he wouldn't recover from until he had that really solid run on ECW.
It hurt his testicles?
It hurt his testicles, exactly.
Okay. Now, I have to ask, was Vinny Russo back yet? Because this sounds like something he would do.
No, actually, at this point, Russo was either already working for... I believe he was already working for TNA.
Yeah, I think so.
With his Sports Entertainment Extreme stable. Because this was actually, once again, back to the birthday money theme of this episode. I bought this pay-per-view, the WWE Anthology CD, the Sonic Mega Collection for GameCube, because I have good taste.
Solid choice.
Oh, yeah, it's just a fantastic fucking collection. And then I discovered TNA on our satellite box, you know, and watched their free all-day pre-show and ended up convincing my mom to let me order one of their shows.
That was a fun conversation. Hey, Mom, can I order some TNA?
I actually referred to it as Total Nonstop Action because
I don't know if that's better or worse.
Right? Well, she's like, what's that? And I'm like, it's the NWA promotion that's on pay-per-view. And my mom grew up in Northeast Arkansas in the 70s and 80s. With a wrestling fan for a grandfather, so she knew the name NWA. So as soon as I threw that out, she's like, oh, okay, it's fine. And then the episode that I, like, purchased was the one where Raven debuted, and the big heel stable at the time was called Sex. So...
because Vince Russo's clever.
Exactly. So 12-year-old Hawk Jefferson didn't make the best of ideas. Well, didn't make... the best of decisions.
Yeah. Is this during the time where they do the famous call, oh shit, it's Vince Russo?
Yeah. Yep. That was not long before I got into TNA.
Okay.
And I was a WCW fan growing up too. So, I was already familiar with Vince Russo and I was not very excited to see him.
Former world champion Vince Russo.
Former world champion Vince Russo. God, what an asshole. I'm just kidding. He's an all right guy, I suppose. He calls me bro a lot on Twitter, so...
I'm sure he does that to everybody.
Well, yeah, but, you know, it's the polite thing to do, I'd say.
Call him bro.
Call him bro. I call so many people bro, it's kind of inappropriate. Inappropriate, yeah. I guess.
Inappropriate.
Da-na-na-na-na-na. Cena comes out at number 18... and he just freestyles the entire, like, 90 seconds.
Like, people are half-assedly, wrestling, and he's just sort of going around. There are, like, people in the ring who are listening and, like, oh, yeah, he's doing a good job.
Yeah, like, way to go. Actually, I was going to transcribe this and just recite it for you guys, but instead I'm just going to cut it in right here, complete with confused JR. So, enjoy this.
Nah, put down your tea party. Get away from your John Hancock, I'm rocking this Thuganomic style. Yo. Besides open mics, one thing that gets me boiled is an old school 30-man battle royal. I'ma win this, I'ma make my impression. Show Vinnie Mac that I got ruthless aggression. The odds were even until you chose me. Now it's 29 dudes and one ruthless MC. Yo, it doesn't matter, kid, cause I ripped your nose off. I could batter you naked with no clothes off. Kid, what you talking about? Three reasons I'ma win this. Reason number one, I cut you up like cucumbers. Reason number two, as you can't approach this, I be choking you like Sprewell be choking coaches. Reason number three is hard for me to explain to you. But I'ma win tonight and go on to WrestleMania. The Royal Rumble's just another test, so I got the pass. Y'all dudes are like a kid with one leg, you half-ass. Yo, what you talking about, kid? You can't touch us. Throw the double clutches if you're down with untouches. Yo, it's my year. I suggest you take the year off. I'm sick like Tyson was when he bit Holyfield's ear off. It doesn't matter, kid. Yo, you should stop defeating me. My style's like a swollen penis. You can't beat me.
All right, so after JR's like, my favorite part of this was when he finished up, JR's like, that was 90 seconds, so what the hell did he say? Word to your mother.
Yeah, JR shows his age a little bit.
Confused old man JR, who hasn't absorbed any pop culture since the 60s, apparently. Fucking, that was, like I said, that's the best part of it. So, 19, just immediately after, and it's Charlie Haas. And he was, you know, he was new at the time, so not really that much of a reaction.
Right. They do chant, you suck, when the angle theme gets to its appropriate point.
Yes. So, I mean, a little transitive heat for the guy. And, I mean, in the next month, Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin are going to get to a point where they main event a pay-per-view.
Right.
So, well, all basically main event a pay-per-view. So, I mean, these guys get hot in a hurry. And in between number 19 and number 20, because not a lot's going on at this point, guys. There's so many people in the ring that just nothing is happening.
It's a bit of a clusterfuck.
It really is. Jeff tries a whisper in the wind, but gets pushed off the top rope by RVD. Rikishi comes in, number 20, and he's having a super kick party, you guys.
When you think of Rikishi, you think super kick party.
Definitely. He's kicking everything in sight, except for Rosie, which they just, like, they take a second, and they're like, oh, hey, we're related, probably. And they team, and then Rosie just fucking clotheslines Rikishi, who takes his incredible, like, flip clothesline bump.
Right.
Easily the best thing the man ever did. Because it certainly wasn't what we saw in a minute. Which was, Jamal came in at number 21.
The future Umaga.
The future Umaga, yes. Jamal comes in at number 21. Both he and Rosie get super kicked. And then Jamal takes a stink face. And we get the horrified line of commentary from JR where he says, I wonder what Rikishi had for lunch. I bet Jamal can tell us.
Yeah.
No.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Stop that, JR. You stop it right now. Number 22 is Kane, who just fucking cleans house. Yeah, brings Rico in to beat on him for no reason.
Well, I mean, you can't resist beating on Rico.
That's true. Rico's there. Better hit him. Fuck.
Yeah, this is also back when Kane was credible.
Yeah, Kane looked like just an absolute monster for a few minutes here. Even going with a double chokeslam spot on Matt and Shannon Moore, he almost eliminates Jericho, but once again, Jericho survives by the skin of his teeth.
Yeah, this is also when he was still masked. He would be unmasked, I think, a couple months later.
Yeah, this is the last little tenured bit of half-masked Kane. Before he actually teamed with RVD, I believe, so... Weird transitional period for Kane, right after Katie Vick, right before fucking Killer Monster.
Mm-hmm.
23 is Shelton Benjamin, and he and Haas do like that really awesome spot that they do, where Haas holds the guy and then Benjamin like fucking breaks him in half.
Yeah.
With the ropes, which I never knew what to call that, and I refer to it as that awesome rope spot they did, but if you've seen it before, you know what I mean. Booker T is out at 24. Really, guys, not a lot is happening at this point.
Yeah.
He immediately starts fighting Kane and Matt Hardy, does a spin-a-rooney, and then eliminates Eddie with a backdrop. So,
yeah, that
bye,
happens.
Eddie. Yeah, you had a couple of cool spots, and then you just kind of did nothing with everybody else.
See you in a year when they decide to care about you.
Yeah, well, see you in 2004, pal. 25 is the A-Train, and Boston just immediately starts the shave your back chant,
mm-hmm.
which I don't blame them for. And
that was the one good thing they did about Tensai.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. Like, good thing they realized their mistake later. It was just like, yeah, we're going to need you to groom. Because I can't imagine wrestling this guy with just the nasty fuck hair all over everything.
It's just like wrestling a fucking carpet.
Just an angry, sweaty Wookiee.
Worst
the best
kind.
Way to describe. Yeah, that's the worst kind of Wookiee. Nobody wants to be the angry, sweaty Wookiee in the room.
No.
So A-Train puts down a bunch of guys with power bombs before he just gets kicked right in the fucking mouth by Rikishi.
Yeah, the super party continues.
Yeah, Rikishi was just kicking everything he could see. It's like he stole Tajiri's gimmick.
Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't do a Meltzer driver real quick.
I would personally love to see Rikishi bust out the mist. But it'd have to be like a funky color because, you know, he's cool.
It'd be brown.
Ugh, oh my god. Ugh, the brown mist. Are you sure that wasn't supposed to be part of the stink face? No, shut up, JR. Shut up. Nobody wants to hear that idea. So Shawn Michaels comes running back out to fight Chris Jericho some more. Cena tries to cut him off, but he's not quite to the level of, like, Goku circa Season 3.
Yeah, he's Goku against Raditz right now.
Yeah, exactly. And he just gets fucking knocked right to the ground. Tess takes advantage of the distraction and eliminates Jericho before Shawn Michaels hits a really great-looking plancha.
Mm-hmm.
26 is Maven, who is still employed at this point.
Yeah, surprisingly. When your big claim to fame is that you threw out The Undertaker one time in the Royal Rumble, you're not doing so hot.
And then got beat. Like, people remember more him getting beat up, I think, than the actual elimination.
Yeah, they don't. The elimination isn't the like issue. He got broken in half, as JR puts it many times.
Just beat the hell up. He does just immediately go for The Undertaker's brother, Kane, though.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not the best idea.
Let me go for the huge guy.
Yeah, let's go for the huge guy that's been destroying everyone for as long as he's been in there. 27 is Goldust, which leads JR to say, the longer they come, the more bizarre they get, which I noted, ew. Ew.
It's up there. That's up there with the stink face line.
Yeah, JR was kind of gross tonight, you guys. Goldust gets a power slam on Benjamin and then a Shattered Dreams on Haas before they just eliminate him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then they turn around and immediately eliminate Booker T, too. It's like they planned that specifically. It's like, you guys were the favorite tag team of the year last year. Well, guess what? It's our turn. Weird little bit of probably unplanned continuity. Batista is out as number 28, and we get an impression of the future as he and Cena just immediately go after each other.
Yeah, he also looks way toned down at this one.
Yeah, Batista at this point was a far cry from what he would become later.
Yeah. He also looks super young.
Yeah, Batista looks really young, and that's
like,
not something I ever
Cena.
Thought I'd say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The dude's still, like, what, 35 at this point?
Yeah, and Cena was in his 20s, I want to say, or early 30s, and Batista had a younger look going for him. And I think, though, like, this moment is one that you can easily point to, or, like, this time period in general, like, right around here, where you could tell that these two guys were definitely people that you needed to pay attention to.
Yeah.
Because no matter what they did, they were made to look like $1 million. And we'd get more of that in a couple of years. Well, actually, the next year, Cena was a big threat to win the Rumble. And then the year after that, they'd both almost win the Rumble and lead to Vince McMahon tearing both quads at once. I can't wait to get there either. Like, there's so much good stuff coming ahead, you guys.
Have to plow through the Scott Steiners and the Harley races and the never mind that shit.
Exactly. You got to get through all that good stuff. And, you know, like Shane McMahon getting his balls electrocuted. I'm getting way ahead of myself, you guys. Tess jumps into the fray, though, with Cena and Batista, and they're like, no, bitch, you are not the future. And Batista throws him out. Then he just immediately eliminates Rikishi, too.
Yeah, because why not?
Right? Now, during the opening match, Cole said several times, whoever wins this match gets the number 30 spot in the Rumble. So Brock Lesnar comes out at number 29. And just because fuck you, that's why. That's exactly why they promoted them as being number 30 and then put him in at 29. He just immediately starts manhandling everyone in sight, though. Like, Lesnar at this point was just, he looked genuinely dangerous.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't mean that in, like, a way where it's like, oh, he's going to hurt somebody. It's like a way that makes you, like, suspend disbelief. And he eliminates both members of Team Angle before hitting a goddamn F5 to the floor on Matt Hardy.
Yeah, he essentially destroys Matt Hardy.
Yeah, like, I felt bad for Matt after that. Undertaker is the actual number 30 spot. He punches everything moving and eliminates Cena. And then Jamal, within like 30 seconds of getting in the ring.
Yeah, American Badass Taker, too.
Yeah, this is some serious, like, big evil, like, brutal fucking matches with Lesnar era Undertaker, which I think, like, for my money, outside of, you know, obviously the Ministry of Darkness, well, the time period right before the Ministry of Darkness, this was probably the best time for the Undertaker.
Yeah.
Maven tries to dropkick him out of the ring, but it doesn't work. And he gets choked. Like, he tries to celebrate. The Undertaker just chokeslams him and eliminates him. RVD and Kane work together to eliminate A-Train. And then Kane just immediately says, fuck you, RVD, and eliminates him. Which, like, the ring went from, like, 12 people in it at one point to 4.
Yep.
In, like, that's 5 minutes. And the final four, Brock Lesnar, Batista, Kane, and The Undertaker. Gee, lads, I wonder who's going to win.
Undertaker, like, right?
Oh, of course, obviously. Like, this was one of the more telegraphed Rumble wins, but this match told a really good story. Kane and Batista just start wailing on each other, but they managed to recover in time to keep Lesnar and Taker apart for a minute. Taker and Brock clean house of Kane and Batista for a minute before they just turn on each other. Brock eats a clothesline, but Taker says, hey, no, I'll wait till he gets up, and clotheslines Batista out instead. Taker and Kane team up, but in yet another double cross, Taker turns on him and throws him out too. Batista tries to come back in the ring. Taker cuts him off, fucking takes the chair from him, hits him with it, and then Lesnar just runs up behind Undertaker and pushes him over the top. 53 minutes, 45 seconds for the Rumble. And Undertaker gets to do something like you wouldn't get to see many people do, in that, you know, he got eliminated. Then he got to come in and he was like, I was that close. I almost beat you. You just barely won, kid. Like, I get it, but at the same time, like, I don't think Undertaker at certain eras gets nearly enough shit for having to maintain his heat.
Yeah.
Like, if Triple H did that, he would be raked over the coals.
Yeah, they would be like, why do they have to put Triple H over? Just let it be Brock Lesnar's moment.
Exactly. Like, the double standard is awful, and we try to do away with those on this show. But that's the end of the show that we're here to discuss. So, on a scale of 1 to 5, what do you give this show?
I'll give it a solid 3. There was enough good that I think what was horrible was just barely outweighed. Enough to make it a decent show.
Yeah, that was kind of my line of thought. I gave it a 3.5 out of 5. It wasn't the best show. What was bad was really bad.
Yeah, the 1-2 punch of Tori Wilson versus Dawn Marie and then Steiner and Triple H was not...
Oh. Yeah, that was not good scheduling, you guys.
Thankfully, everything else was pretty decent at best, or was pretty decent, and then it moved up from there.
Yeah, I really enjoyed a lot of the good stuff on the show, and I hated the bad stuff. So, speaking of good stuff, I mean, I think we can both just pretty obviously agree, match of the night, Benoit and Angle.
Oh, without a doubt.
Definitely. And then we can probably agree that the worst match of the night was Triple H and Scott Steiner.
When you make Tori Wilson and Dawn Marie look better by comparison, it's a shit match.
At least Dawn Marie and Tori Wilson was short enough to be forgettable.
Yeah. Yeah, this match, it has to be remembered. And then it ends by teasing another match later.
Yeah. Oh, man. And then the other match is somehow worse.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So what about, like, so we've got a lot of bad workers, and we've got a lot of good workers, but who is your MVP and your least valuable player for this show?
If I say the MVP was Benoit, am I going to get, like, flamed?
Hey, leave him alone about it, naming Benoit the MVP. Suck it. He kicked ass. I give it to Benoit and Angle both.
Yeah, they put on a clinic, but I have to, I think I would give the edge to Benoit despite the, I'm not looking at him as the person. I'm looking at what match he put on. They put on a solid match.
Oh, yeah, he put on a spectacular match, and his selling, like, was off the charts. Like, I think people forget how good of a seller he was and how well he could convey the story with his facial expressions.
Yeah. Runner-up
so least valuable.
Other than Angle, of course, would probably be Brock Lesnar, by the way, because Lesnar looked great.
Oh, definitely.
Great.
Lesnar looked fantastic on this show.
At least.
Very believable as their, like, future of the company.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely no Roman Reigns here.
Definitely not. He didn't make it rain in this bitch not a once.
Yeah, least is probably the easiest choice because it's Scott Steiner.
Huh? Yeah, definitely Scott Steiner. Just the fucking worst. And just, like, if you can make me feel bad for Triple H during a match...
You done fucked up, kid.
Yeah, you've done an awful, awful job of whatever you were trying to do. But, now that we've handed out all the awards and said all we need to say, let's get our shit in. Where can people find you on the internet, Swanson?
You can find me on Twitter, at Jesse Swanson. And you can also, I guess you can find me on Facebook. I don't know if anybody actually does that. I probably wouldn't accept your friend request if I didn't know you, so.
Makes sense.
Yeah, you can also find me on the Freakin' Awesome Network, which is also your place.
Yeah, I just recently took over as the third part of the Triforce, and I'm proud to be there.
Yeah, which part of the Triforce are you? The upper right, the upper left, or the bottom?
I'm the bottom part of it because I'm the new guy.
Okay. The new guy always starts at the bottom.
Exactly. Started from the bottom, now I'm slightly above that level.
Mm-hmm. That's how it goes. I'd also like to... Oh, sorry, continue.
I was concurring.
You were concurring with me?
Yeah, I was.
You were in concurrent?
Exactly. Okay. Concurrence.
All right, good. You can also find me over at ZestyAroma.com. It's another friend's site of mine. I do writing stuff there occasionally as well. And then you can always find me every Tuesday, usually, on TV Tuners. That's the podcast where me and my co-host, Keo Rain, watch TV shows, all in the search of the greatest TV show ever made.
Solid. Solid. I'm going to have to get in on that action.
Oh, yeah. We're currently going through Trailer Park Boys, which, despite the name, is actually all right.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Guys, go watch it, and then listen to his podcast.
Yeah, and you can do both. Well,
yeah,
I prefer you watch it before you listen to it, but...
Because then you'll be lost otherwise.
Yeah.
All right, so I've got just a laundry list of plugs here. See, I'm on, obviously, the Freakin' Awesome Network forums, which is where you can, come chat with me, enjoy, whatever questions you need to ask of me. Also check out the website that I'm currently working on making the best goddamn pop culture site on the internet. FreakingAwesomeNetwork.com.
Yes.
I'm also on Botchamania.com, where you can find just amazing numbers of fantastic content.
You're on Botchamania.
I'm a Botchamania branded show.
I feel like I should have known that before coming on, but man, I feel more credible by just being on this show.
Yeah, Matthew's my buddy. Shout out to Matthew.
Yeah. Hey, Matthew. I love your work.
Who's traveling and hopefully doesn't die because he's picked such a garish photo to be used if he does die.
I also want to let Matthew know that every time I watched King of Trios this year, I looked for him in the crowd.
Did you find him?
Oh, yeah. He was, like, front and center on the second night.
Oh, yeah. That guy is just, he's top-notch. No matter what they say about him.
Yeah.
So, other than that, you can't really find me anywhere else. Oh, except for Twitter. If you do the whole Twitter thing, I am at Hawk Jefferson. I'm also at Ruthless Podcast. I run both accounts because I'm the only one that cares enough to, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Who really likes Twitter?
It feels like nobody. It's sort of just something that you have to use.
Yeah, like Twitter's useful, but I don't really like it. So if you want to talk to me, just come on over to the Freaking Awesome Network forums. We've got a thread and everything.
Yeah, you can find me there too, by the way. I'm not as active as good old Hawkeye over here. But I do post on occasion, usually in specific threads, but I'm around usually. I usually check it at least once a day. But I'm there under the title of the Super Albino.
Yeah, so come chat with us. Be our friends. Mm-hmm. Follow us on Twitter. All that good stuff. Like I said earlier, next time you hear this voice, Magic may or may not be here. Asher may or may not be here.
I won't.
Matt, yeah, Swanson's not going to be here. I mean, I'm a man just adrift with no steady co-host. But Matt from the Yappa Podcast has agreed to lend us his vocal talents as we review No Way Out 2003, which took place February 23rd, 2003, obviously, at the Bell Center in Montreal, Quebec. It features The Rock versus Hulk Hogan 2,
oh boy.
Steve Austin versus Eric Bischoff, Brock Lesnar and Chris Benoit against Team Angle.
Okay, that's good.
Meaning Kurt Angle and Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas.
That sounds decent.
That was pretty fun. And the rematch of the century between Triple H and Scott Steiner.
I feel so sorry for you guys. You have to watch a second Steiner. Or you especially. You have to watch a second Scott Steiner and Triple H match.
Yeah, it's shorter than the last one, though. So hopefully I'll survive. If I'm not driven mad, look forward to that episode, you guys.
And if he is, look forward to the broken audio of him just screaming.
Exactly. One way or another, you're getting some content. But yeah, thanks for joining us tonight, Swanson. I appreciate your talents.
Oh, not a problem.
And thank you guys for listening. Go ahead and... Oh, I totally forgot something. You're listening to this. Go on iTunes. Rate us 5 stars. Fucking subscribe to the show. Go on Stitcher. Subscribe to the show there. Rate us 5 stars. Just... help us get over.
Yeah, don't be a Bret Hart. Don't give them -5 stars.
Exactly. But this is where we'll leave you. We'll see you next time for No Way Out 2003.